Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
Testing, testing, hot outbound car, 1, 2, 3, 4, testing, testing.
Hey, boss, you know, Ralph, I'm getting a little nervous out here. I don't know how you can keep so calm back there.
Get ready. 10 seconds. 5 seconds. Go.
Hey, I can't find nothing on the radio. You'll turn to that station.
Your one definition of a friend is someone who's there when you need him. Well, I needed him and he's here. Ladies and gentlemen, my friend Elton
Jim.
Good morning, Elton Jim.
Elton Jim.
The one, the only, Elton Jim Toronto.
I'm back. Elton Jim here on July 3rd, 4th of July weekend at WGN. Great to be back here. There are people milling around on Michigan Avenue. The weather is beautiful, and wow, what a great day. I am so excited to be back here. I'm filling in for Brian Noonan. I hope Brian's having a good time with whatever he's doing today. And I am honored to be able to fill in the slot. This is actually kind of a cool slot for me. Because it takes me back when I was hosted my college radio show at good old Elmhurst College. At WRSC. My slot was 6 to 9.
Look at you. Every day?
No, every Sunday.
Oh, every look at this.
So I am back in my same exact spot. And what's great is I graduated years ago hoping to get into radio.
Yeah.
And years later, I'm still hoping to get into radio.
Do you know what the...
So it's been quite a career.
Did they have a special slogan for the radio station? What were you guys known as?
Oh, we were WRSC. I don't even know. I don't even know what we were.
Oh, okay.
I don't think we were anything. Except on 6 to 9
well,
every Sunday.
Confidence.
I wasn't Elton Jim then. I was just Jim Toronto. But okay. So if there's any fans out there from X amount of years ago, which I'm afraid to even admit how many years it's been since I graduated. Oh God, I was watching a rerun of Parks and Recreation today, and so Rob Lowe is on, and he goes to the doctor. He's got a pain in his shoulder, and he's got some arthritis or some tendonitis, and so. You know, the doctor says, well, you're in very good shape for a guy who's 44 years old. And Rob Lowe is all very positive as this character on Parks and Recreation. And he says, well, what's the cure? And the doctor says, get a time machine and be 20 years old again. Like, yeah, right. I fell off the couch because, of course, I have no balance because I'm older than even 44. And I wish I had that time machine sometimes.
Well, wait a minute. Don't you have the couch that has the seatbelts on it now?
I do. You know what? I want that tub that you walk into.
Oh, with the little door
with
swings
the door.
Open and closed.
I don't even.
Yeah.
I don't take baths. Mm-hmm. But gosh, I want a tub with a door on it.
Yeah.
And I wonder, does it have like automatic locks like in a car?
Well, it's sealed. It's got that really good seal. So
yeah.
Kind of like a suction.
Well, it's got to have a good seal
or
you'll drown.
Wet floor. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
But how great is that?
You'll end up like Lucy, stuck in the shower, floating up to
remember
the top.
That? That was on the Lucy show. That
I
was
know.
A great one. And then Viv gets in there, too.
Right, right. They're both trying to climb out. They can't climb out the top.
Yeah, somehow Lucy and Viv did not look as good as Mary Tyler Moore did with the capri pants in the 60s.
No.
That's all I have to say, especially Viv.
Right.
Viv, I love you. Vivian Vance, I love you. But no capri pants for you, especially when you're in a shower. Over your head. If you remember that, their blouse was actually.
Yeah,
I think they
was
even
floating.
Had,
Everything
I
was
think
floating.
They wore T-shirts in that scene. It's a very famous scene from the Lucy show.
Yeah.
It was after I Love Lucy, and they're stuck in a shower that's filled with water, and they're swimming around. But when their tops were floating up, and I think they were wearing T-shirts.
It's possible. I just remember the floating scene. So it was just and that they.
Well,
I was looking
at their chests. I
mean, hey
even,
now,
even at a young age, I was like, hey, Vivian Vance, not bad.
Okay.
Not bad.
Oh, my.
I would go there.
Now we're getting Vivian Vance calls. Yeah. Hold on a second.
Well, how are you doing, Roger?
I'm doing great. I'm having a great 4th of July weekend.
Are you?
It's been quiet, you know, knock on Formica.
There you go.
Around our place, so Rufus hasn't been going too crazy.
Nice.
There have been a few. We have a neighbor across the street who every 4th of July just sets off every illegal fireworks you could possibly think of.
Nice.
And they float over towards our place, the cinders.
Oh, geez.
So, and of course, the police have their hands full with more important things. So it's we just kind of wait them out and hope that there's no more damage than what they do in their own place.
And a personal note, I just wanted to say, no, you you lost your father recently. I just wanted to send my condolences.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
I certainly
it.
Know how
Appreciate
that feels. It. And don't worry about it. Stay strong. But as I always tell people that lose a parent, and I've lost both of mine, it's been almost 10 years for both of them now. And I can say, as you know what, it's supposed to hurt.
Yeah.
It should hurt when you lose somebody close. It shouldn't just be easy to get over. I still cry for my parents every day.
Yeah.
And I'm the tears are tributes to them.
Yeah, exactly.
So I view that as a tribute to them. And so I say, as you know, when you lose somebody special, it should hurt. And it should hurt for a long time.
Yeah, of course.
So that just becomes
so great.
Yeah, part of your life. So, you know, you certainly everybody goes through their grieving thing. But if you keep their spirit and their memories alive every day, they're with you. And that's the way I feel about it.
Yeah, so, and, you know, he was already into his 100th year.
Oh, how great is
and,
that?
And, you know.
You know, that's a nice run, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just wanted to say, I saw it on your Facebook page, but I just wanted to tell you.
Thanks.
So, hang in there. Stay strong.
Yep.
But you'll find out you smile more than you don't.
Oh, yeah.
When you think of them.
Oh, because, and I'll tell you, this is, July 4th is one of his favorite holidays.
Oh.
Because back in the day, and I think you're a little too young for this.
I wish.
But back after the war and in through the 60s, there was a national organization called Civil Defense.
Oh, yeah.
And they used to have the signs up in the school.
Yeah, the yellow sign.
Right.
Yeah,
right,
I remember those signs.
Pointing you to where the bomb shelters were.
And you would get under your desk.
Exactly.
Now, I never did that. I am a little too young for that, but I do remember seeing and hearing about that.
Right. This is how you're going to stay safe from a nuclear attack. Get under your desk.
Don't worry about the radiation.
No, the radiation
won't hurt you.
No.
It's the blast.
Yeah. Right. You and the desk will still be standing. The building will be gone.
Yeah. Ask the people in Chernobyl.
Yeah, right.
Ask the three-eyed fishes in Russia.
Yeah. So he was in charge of the Evanston Civil Defense Office.
Oh, wow.
And so we used to ride in a repurposed, I guess, a surviving World War II duck.
Oh, right.
You know,
those could
go in the water. It was a boat in the water and had wheels to go on land. And so we'd be in the Evanston 4th of July parade riding in the duck, jumping in and out. And and we'd keep going past I still call Dyke Stadium.
Right.
Right. And we keep going to the boat dock.
Into the water.
Right into the water.
Oh, great.
Oh, it was great 4th of July. He loved 4th of July.
Great.
Yeah. So this is a good holiday for remembering.
Well,
and,
good for you.
Yeah. So we're all good.
Yeah.
We're all good.
Well, I just want to give you a quick little rundown. We've got, once again, 3 pounds of bologna jammed into a one-pound radio bag. But actually, this is kind of good kind of bologna. We're going to be talking a little later with an author of a new book that's going to actually be coming out this week about the Seinfeld show that's called Seinfeldia. And it's all about how the show got developed, how it got started. There's interviews with people behind the scenes, and I haven't spoken to this woman, but I have emailed her back and forth. So if you like Seinfeld, I love Seinfeld. This woman is obviously an expert as well. So we're going to have some really fun Seinfeld chats. We're also going to talk to an author about a new book that is coming out, or just is out now, called Terror in the City of Champions. It's kind of like the book, what was that, Murder in the White City?
Yeah. About the guy here during the World's Fair.
Yeah, this happened in the 30s. The three Detroit teams were all won their championships, the Tigers, the Red Wings, and the Lions. And in the midst of I think it was 1935, they won all three championships. All those teams won the championships of their sports. In the meantime, there was some weird hate crimes going on in Detroit. So it's an interesting kind of subtext of the city going crazy with their sports teams. And Joe Louis was the champ who was from Detroit.
Sure.
And then meanwhile, there's this series of murders and weirdness going on. So it's an interesting little story that not too many know about. So we'll talk to author Tom Stanton a little later. We'll talk a little sports with Mark Vasco. And then we'll do the legal segment with Karen Conti. So we're jam-packed, and as I said at the top of the show to Mark Carmen, we've got a special correspondent after the break. We have a special correspondent who is at Soldier Field right now at the parking lot. Chicago today is Paradise City. Guns and I know it's 4th of July, but it's Paradise City. It's Guns N' Roses week, and they were here Friday. They're here tonight. They're at Soldier Field. I'm sure people are on their way. Hey, give me a call at 312-981-7200 if you're on your way to the concert, if you saw the concert the other night, if you're in the parking lot, whatever it is. We're certainly going to celebrate that, and I'm very excited that there's a special WGN. We got our van. The WGN van is out in the lot right now.
Look for – it's like the movie.
Yeah.
It's a mad, 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 mad world. Remember, look for the big
look
W.
For the for the big blue W.
Right, look for the big W.
And it's going to be there. So after the break, we're gonna head live to the Soldier Field parking lot with a very special correspondent. I'm Elton Jim filling in for Brian Noonan. We got lots planned. I'm coming back after the break. I hope you do, too. Yeah. I don't care what weekend you say it is. It's 4th of July. It's this. Tonight, Chicago is Paradise City, folks. Within probably 3 or 4 miles from me as I sit here at Michigan Avenue, Axl, Slash, and the rest. There's been so many different incarnations. Oh, I know you have to have those. If any kind of rock and roll reunion, you got to have at least the lead singer and the lead guitarist. You need Townsend and Daltrey. You need Jagger and Richards. You need Plant and Page. You need Axl and Slash. And that's what they have. That's good enough good Guns N' Roses for me. So if you are out there today, or you're out there Friday, you know this has been a reunion that very few thought would ever happen. But I guess when the paycheck is big enough, all those squabbles and all those principles that you held to when you were young men suddenly fade away when they put 10 or 15 or 20 or 30 million in front of you. It's funny how somehow your backbone sort of gets a little softer when that much money is put in front of you. Hey, who can deny them? And there's a ton of GNR fans out there who are excited about this reunion. And I saw the set list look pretty good from Friday night. So if you're out there, have a good time. I want to get a sense of what is going on at Soldier Field. I'm so happy. Even though it is a weekend here, we got the WGN van to go out to Soldier Field. And we've got a very special correspondent. I never would have thought that this WGN personality was a fan of Guns N' Roses. But he said, I'm going to be out there. I'd be happy to call in from the parking lot and give you a little on-site report and give you a little mood as to what's going on here. So I'm very excited. Let's go out to the parking lot there, Soldier Field. Are you there, special WGN correspondent?
Hello, Elton Jim. This is Orion. How are you?
Orion! First of all, thank you for working on a holiday.
Well, welcome to the jungle, Elton Jim. My wife Gloria and I are here at Soldier Field. Oh, by the way, corn contracts down 4% at the closing.
Wow, you're able to do a farm report and a Guns N' Roses report all at the same time.
Well, Elton Jim, you are certainly a sweet child of mine.
Wow. Orion, I don't know what to say. Now, how long have you been into these? I thought you would be a little more of a country, or I know you were in a Oompa band.
Oompa Shmoompa. I love rock and roll. Put another coin in the jukebox. You know, the crops in Illinois in the spring always grow better after a November rain.
Oh, nice. Orion. So you know what you're talking about.
Well, of course, Elton Jim, I've been quite a fan of GNR since their explosive 1987 debut, Appetite for Destruction. The album is a masterpiece, as you know. I was never really into the Use Your Illusion albums, but I also did like their Lies EP.
Wow, you know your Guns N' Roses.
Yes, I do, Elton Jim. By the way, Hogs up 7% at the closing.
Oh, well, thank you, Orion. So, Orion, give me a little sense as to what's going on out there at Soldier Field.
Well, Elton Jim, it is quite a scene. lots of bandanas, young women with leather vests.
Now, what are you? Are you into the mood here?
Yes, of course. I'm wearing my Slash top hat.
Oh, Ori, you've got a Slash top hat. Like, I hope you're going to take a selfie with that. Orion with a Slash top hat.
Well, yeah, Eddie, you could have your Jimmy Pages. You can have your Eric Claptons. In my view, no one shreds a guitar solo like Slash. By the way, Cow's down 4% at the closing.
Wow, so you're a big Slash fan.
Love Slash very much, Elton Jim.
So now, what are you going to be doing? Are you going to the concert?
Definitely. In fact, I was out here Friday night, and the concert was amazing. It was great to see Axl and Slash back where they belong. Gloria and I, after the show, went to Jameson's in Huntley, and we had the onion blossom onion rings, the Big O's.
Oh, nice. So now, was Gloria always into Guns N' Roses?
No, Elton Jim. When I met Gloria, she was not a Guns N' Roses fan like I was. But I got her into it, and she really likes the cover version they do of Live and Let Die.
Wow, so Gloria is into it as well.
Yes, in fact, after tonight's show, we may follow the band for several shows in the Midwest, where the grain is always gold and the grass is always green, just like in Paradise City.
Wow. Well, Orion, I am shocked that you know this much about Guns N' Roses, but you are certainly painting a picture. Orion Samuelson at Soldier Field in the parking lot with a Slash top hat.
And a leather vest. As you may remember, I wore my leather vest when I would come do your show many times, and I think I got it at the Grand Ole Opry. I think I may have told you that one time.
So you're wearing that vest? You have no T-shirt, just the vest?
No, I've got the guns on display.
Wow, Orion, what a sight. Leather vest, Slash top hat, and the bare guns. I'm loving it.
Let me just say, Samuelson says, Guns N' Roses rock.
Well, I'll tell you, Orion, if we can check in with you perhaps throughout the night, we will. If not, enjoy the show. Say hi to your lovely wife, Gloria. I'm glad that she's enjoying herself there as well. And who knew that Orion was going to follow Guns N' Roses? You're a Guns N' Roses head.
I've been waiting for this reunion for many years. And oh, by the way, the markets will be closed tomorrow for the 4th of July holiday.
Well, that's Orion Samuelson from the parking lot at Soldier Field. Who would have thought that Orion Samuelson, the pillar of broadcasting in this city, and especially at this station for more than a half a century, who would have thought? Did you hear him rattle off those songs?
Boy, he knows his grains and Guns N' Roses.
I mean, I know that he was in a Oompah band. Yeah, I thought that Orion would easily, would be more into a country music. He was born in Wisconsin, but who thought that he was a rocker?
Yeah, the image of him in his leather jacket and T-shirt.
And the Slash top hat.
Yeah.
I love, I hope Orion takes a selfie of himself with the Slash top hat out there.
Yeah.
That's and he might go to, he might, you know, he's going to become like
a groupie.
An Axl head.
Yeah. I could just see Orion the groupie.
Well, thank you, Orion. Once again, the WGN van out there with Orion. If you see Orion in the parking lot or somewhere in the studio, in the stadium tonight at Soldier Field for the Guns N' Roses concert, please say hi and tell him that you heard him on the radio.
Wow. Look for the big W.
The big O.
Oh, the big O, yeah.
Come on. Oops. Well, I wasn't supposed to do that. Well, hey, you made me break character, Roger. Here I create this beautiful theater of the mind. Everybody in the city of Chicago and out of in the suburbs and throughout this country thought that Orion Samuelson was at the Guns N' Roses concert, and now you lifted up the veil.
I didn't lift anything. There was no curtain.
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Oh, Roger. Way to start things.
I didn't do nothing.
Just for that, I am going to punish the audience by saying it's 6:30 and here's Roger Badish with the news.
I don't understand. I made a reservation. Do you have my reservation?
Yes, we do. Unfortunately, we ran out of cars.
But the reservation keeps the car here. That's why you have the reservation.
I know why we have reservations.
I don't think you do. If you did, I'd have a car. See, you know how to take the reservation. You just don't know how to hold the reservation. And that's really the most important part of the reservation, the holding. Anybody can just take it.
Ah, yes. If you are a TV nut like I am, you know that bit by heart. In fact, I was actually acting that out as it was playing, because if you remember that scene from Seinfeld, when he's at a car rental place, he says, anybody can just take them, and he's like grabbing out into the air. And I'm playing that because my first guest today on the show is Jennifer Cation Armstrong, and she has written what I think is going to be turning out to be perhaps the Seinfeld Bible. It's called Seinfeldia, and it's how a show about nothing changed everything. Jennifer, are you there?
I am.
How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Well, first off, I should say that Jennifer, while she is a highfalutin author, is from Homer Glen, Illinois.
Sure am.
Yeah. How long were you here before you went and sold out to the big city?
Well, I was there all the way through. I mean, I went to college at Northwestern.
Oh, my goodness.
Medill wow. School of Journalism.
Well, look at you.
I know. So I left after that.
Oh, very
and
nice.
I actually did come back for a little while. I had gone to Southern California for a little bit and then came back for a little over a year and lived in Oak Park
and
then went to New York.
Good
so,
for you.
So, yeah, I've been all over the place there.
Well, welcome home back on good old WGN here in Chicago.
Thank you. I was really enjoying listening to the traffic report. It was giving me nostalgia.
Oh, yeah, all those streets. You remember all those streets now, right? It's
yep.
funny where nostalgia comes from. On street names, you can even get nostalgia.
Absolutely, especially the expressways. There's something about the traffic report in Chicago to me that's just, you know, childhood.
Well, our highways have names. Most highways just have numbers, but ours have names for some reason.
That's exactly what it is hearing, you know, when I was a kid and hearing like the Kennedy, and I didn't even know what that was. It was just like, I just went with it. But I can remember hearing it in my dad's car over and over again. So,
well, I'll tell you, I was reading the latest issue of Entertainment Weekly, and mm-hmm. I saw an excerpt from your forthcoming book, which actually comes out this week on the 5th, right?
Yep. Yes,
so,
on Tuesday.
So great. So people run out here. It's a new book right off the right off the presses. It's called Seinfeldia. Very cool cover with showing kind of the diner with the name on it. But I just read, maybe 2 or 3 page excerpt from Entertainment Weekly, and I was riveted. And so I said, how do I get Jennifer on the phone to talk to her about this book? I'm a Seinfeld fan literally from day one. I always liked Jerry Seinfeld to begin with. And so I watched the show, and I have to admit, I like you, I mean, what's so great about this book, and I only got it a couple days ago, and I'm practically finished. I just have to read all your footnotes now.
That's great.
Yeah. I'm glad you put the footnotes in. I always enjoy a good footnote.
Thank you.
Yes. I know. I know the effort it takes to write the footnote. That's worse than writing the book.
Yes, it's always like, oh my God, you're done. Wait.
Yeah, no kidding.
So that's wonderful that you're going to read.
You're waxing poetic about the show, and then you have all this other homework at the back.
Exactly.
But what's great about this is that not only do you give an insight and a background as to how Jerry and Larry David came together, put together the idea for the book or for the show, you also talk to many of the writers and many of the other behind-the-scenes people. And it really is cool because if you are a fan of the show, it's funny because there's some moments here that you recreate and a fan will immediately flash on those. And then to hear how all those little things came together. You mentioned Kathy Griffin, and she was on a couple of times. And you mentioned some of these episodes with all these different storylines and how many times, one writer would get credit because they came up with just one of the storylines, not the whole episode.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it was, and then you said, as you say, not only did Larry David draw from his own life, but many of the writers did too.
Yeah, it actually, one of the things I was really interested in is, first of all, they had a lot of turnover in the writing staff. Every year there was mostly, you know, some, like, most of the writing staff left and a new group would come in. And the way I see that is that it was a lot about, they were just bringing people in to kind of mine their lives. You know, it was like, all right, bring in a new crop of lives.
Right.
And news. And then they were spent by the end. Honestly, like, not that many interesting, funny things happened to most of us.
Exactly.
And then the other problem is, if you're writing for the show, you, nothing's happening to you because you're stuck, like, they worked so hard. So they would kind of be spent by the end of the year, and at least the ones I talked to were pretty much like, yeah, you know, first of all, it gave me tons of opportunity after that. And also, I really did feel kind of spent. So in a lot of ways, they seemed pretty well adjusted about leaving. Of course, I'm sure there's plenty of others out there who didn't want to talk to me for the very reason that they were still, you know, mad about that or something.
Right.
But, I think it's really interesting.
I think one of the reasons, to your point, is why the show still resonates. I mean, it's almost 20 years since its final episode.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. From our generation, and I'm not sure exactly how old you are. I'm not going to put you on the spot. But my point is, I grew up watching reruns of Andy Griffith and Dick Van Dyke. I never saw those shows in first run and things like that. And those shows always seemed old because, first of all, they were in black and white. But here's Seinfeld that, you know, it's still on all the time. And it's hard to believe that it's been 20 years, not since it first aired. It's been off the air for 20 years, almost, 1998.
Yeah, to me, that was one of the most interesting things about the show is its staying power. I mean, in my opinion, I feel like it almost feels like it's still on the air, just in the sense that it's omnipresent. People still quote it. They still run ads on it, at least in the subways here in New York City and stuff. Like, TBS and the channels that run the reruns still run ads.
Right.
You know, all the time, which, you know, they don't do for most reruns. And, you know, it's like, and they're still there, preserved forever. Like, they haven't aged. The actors are right there. And, you know, also even the actors, I would say, they're still in culture. They're still relevant. Larry David's running around doing,
everything.
Saturday Night Live because of Bernie Sanders.
And Julie Louis-Dreyfus.
Julie Louis-Dreyfus is having an incredible career still because she's a genius. And, you know, it just all feels like it's still, and when they did the Super Bowl commercial a few years ago, people went crazy. And, you know, it's like you said, it isn't the same just like, oh, we're going to watch Andy Griffith for some nostalgia. It feels like it's still really relevant, aside from, of course, the hairstyle.
And I think one of the reasons that the show still feels very much in the present is that, as you explained, that the writers were mining their own lives. And so instead of writers sitting in a room trying to come up with some farcical thing, how Jack Tripper and Mr. Furley are going to paint the house and then some goofy thing is going to happen, you know, it's some farcical kind of, you know, just crazy thing to just, you know, if Lenny and Squiggy are going to open up a restaurant. But instead, these are, and how many times, I mean, as even though a lot of these situations and many times are certainly exaggerated to some extent, but we've all in some way can relate to some of these things. We do stupid things. We say stupid things. We get in goofy situations, and they may not always be exact, but they're close enough where you go, wow, that was just like when I blank, blank, blank. And so that's what I think makes the show so relevant today is because it really is real life.
Yeah, I do think that's exactly what it is. And one of my favorite things is that the writers told me that Larry David told them, take things that happen to you in real life and then have the characters do the thing you wish you had done.
Oh, cool. Very good. Right.
Right. So, like, that's why we love it, is it's, we relate to it, but then they do the thing that we're like, oh, I wish I had the guts to do. You know, of course we're not going to do what George would do because he's an idiot.
Right.
But, you know, we don't have to take the consequences, but we can watch him act out kind of our fantasy of what we would do. Even that bit you played at the beginning, it's one of my favorites, by the way, the rental car one.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I was just doing that one the other day, literally like 2 days ago. And, you know, that's the thing is, like, then you get in that situation and you quote that as, like, this release of, like, oh, why don't you take the reservation, but why don't you hold the reservation?
Well, think about even in everyday life. How many times do you say, not that there's anything wrong with that?
Yes, exactly.
Even when you're not talking about someone being gay.
Yep.
You just take it out of that context. Or, you know, oh, what are you going to be, a re-gifter?
Right.
You know, I mean,
right.
some of these little catchphrases have now become not only part of the pop culture, but part of just our regular jargon.
Exactly. That's what's so, it's really one of my favorite things that I found out while I was researching this book, too. It's not really in there because I didn't get into this too much, but I visited some classes that study Seinfeld. There's a class actually at DePaul that studies Seinfeld sometimes. And so a lot of the kids said, you know, they're young, they're 20 years old or something. And a lot of them were surprised when they started learning about Seinfeld. They were like, oh, we didn't realize like that's where this phrase comes from. Like, we heard yada yada. We just didn't know
exactly.
That it started with that.
Right.
You know? And that's really interesting.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, we're going to take a quick break here. We'll be back with Jennifer Cation Armstrong. She is the author of a new book coming out this week called Seinfeldia. And as I said at the top of this, just a really good collection of anecdotes as well as some nice history. There's a lot of lore that goes along with Seinfeld as to how things started. And what's nice about this book is that you actually put some of the folklore to rest and you get down to some of the facts. And what's also interesting about the development of the show, as we just talked about it being so based on real life, is that many of the episodes dealt with Jerry and George writing a sitcom.
Yes.
And that's almost exactly the way that Larry David and Jerry. So, I mean, a lot of it is on the screen as well. But what's nice to see is that you back it up with the way things really happened as opposed to how they showed it for comic entertainment effect on the TV show.
Exactly. That's one of my favorite arcs on the show.
Well, hold on. We'll be right back with Jennifer Cation Armstrong. This is Elton Jim. I'm filling in for Brian Noonan today. I'll be here till 9 o'clock. Phone number is 312-981-7200. If you've got any kind of Seinfeld questions or just want to share one of your favorite Seinfeld episodes, I still watch the show. In fact, on Saturday mornings at like 5 a.m. and Sunday mornings at 5 a.m. It's on TBS. Guess what I was doing this morning? I was watching Seinfeld at 5 a.m. So I still watch it. My wife rolls her eyes. I can watch those same episodes over and over, and I'm still laughing. So hold on a second. We'll be right back with Jennifer here at WGN, Elton Jim, right after this.
Boy, these pretzels are making me thirsty.
Is that how you're going to say it?
No, I'm working on it.
Do it like this. These pretzels are making me thirsty.
These pretzels are making me thirsty.
No, see, that's no good. See, you don't know how to act.
These pretzels are making me thirsty.
Great episode. That's the one where George is parking cars in the neighborhood. And he's got a whole belt of keys. And then there's an old guy in the neighborhood who usually parks the cars, but he goes on vacation. And he comes back and George ruins a Woody Allen filming on the block, as well as gets all these cars. And I love the guy who comes back the next day with all the, he gets fired. He goes, why can't you park cars? It's like putting on your pants. I want to know who's putting on your pants. I love that. I'm talking to Jennifer Cation Armstrong. She is the author of a new book called Seinfeldia, How a Show About Nothing Changed Everything. And I must say that I was doing some research on you. And since you are, my mom was never on the South Side, but I think we may be siblings. You may be the sister I never had.
I love it.
I don't know. Because
we're in the same town.
Yeah, because my mom may have ventured to the South Side. I don't know. She was a wild gal. Because you and I really share a lot of the same interests. You did a book about the Mary Tyler Moore Show.
I did. That was booked before this one.
Yeah, and I love the Mary Tyler Moore Show, and I want to hopefully get into that a little bit, but I do want to talk about this book. So tell me why you decided that the world needed a book called Seinfeldia.
Well, I write about television for a living, you know, which is not a bad gig. And I, you know, covered mainly television when I was on staff at Entertainment Weekly for about 10 years. And particularly, I'm really interested in television history. And, you know, I just think if you're going to do a book about a TV show, I don't think you can do much better than Seinfeld. You'd be surprised once you start. If this is your job and you're really sitting there thinking about, like, what TV show can I write a book about, there's not a lot of them that stand up to book treatment. You know, it's
how
like,
long did it take to write? How long did it take from the idea to finish?
I would say about 2 years.
Wow, okay.
Something like that. Wow. Yeah. I always want it to be a year, but it always stretches a little longer than that.
Right.
You know, research, it's hard to like stop researching and start the writing process. Because it's fun. It's fun to research and, you know, it's a lot of interviews and you could go for a long time and there's a point at which you have to say like, okay, we're going to stop and we're going to write this thing and, you know, move on with our lives. But yeah, I just think Seinfeld's probably one of the most, if not the most influential shows of our modern times. I think most of what we see on TV now, you can sort of, there's something about it. You can sort of trace the DNA back to Seinfeld. It had a huge cultural impact at the time. It kind of ushered in the modern era of television in terms of like the way that people watch now, the really obsessive way that people watch, and also like the hype for the finales and the media coverage. That didn't used to be the way TV was. And it sort of, I think, was the forerunner for what we're now all calling the golden age of television. It really kind of helped to usher that in. So there's a lot to say.
Yeah, and what I think is interesting, too, even though I did watch the show early on, because I did like Jerry Seinfeld, my gosh, when you watch those early episodes, as you note in the book, and I'm glad you did this, you didn't pull any punches. The show, I would say, the first several episodes are really hard to watch.
They're pretty weird.
Yeah,
right?
there's no chemistry, there's no pacing. As you've pointed out, and I always said from the first minute, George Costanza is basically Woody Allen.
Yeah.
You know, and Kramer is not Kramer yet. Elaine is not, you know, you could see that there was a turning point. I do remember saying to myself, when it first aired, I saw it when it first aired, and I said to myself, from now on, I could never stop watching this show. And that was when I saw the contest. That was so well written, where they never said the word masturbation on network television, and the way they showed it, and they show how everybody was dropping out by whoever was sleeping at night.
I know, I love that.
Yeah, I mean, it's so clever, it was so well written, it's so smart, and yet so silly. And that's what's so great about that show is, you know, it's well written, it's very intelligent, but there's also slapstick. It's a silly show.
Yeah, they're cartoon characters.
Yeah.
That's part of the appeal. They remain the same. That's something that's really fascinating to me is, This took the opposite approach from all sitcoms before it, right? With the no hugging, no learning rule that Larry David had, that meant no character development. This was not about these people. They did get comeuppance on occasion, and you know, finale is another story.
Right?
But like, you know, aside from that, it's not like this thing where we all grew, you know, on Friends. Oh, we all grew up and we all learned and we all came into ourselves and now we go off to the world.
That's not how real life is.
Right. They stayed exactly the same. And I think that's another reason it endures is that we can imagine dropping George Costanza into a scenario right now and understand what he would do. And that is appealing to us, that enduring character. It's all about character. But you're right. They didn't have those. You know, it took them a while to develop those characters. And they were lucky that they had the chance to and that they had the chance to do it. Even though, and I think it's best that they were doing it when they weren't doing well in the ratings because not as many people were watching. So they could kind of flail around for a little while.
Yeah, exactly.
And they really found their groove like right around the time they started to pick up, which is great. You don't see that a lot in TV now.
But I mean, when you think about some of the class, and not only were there some great episodes, but But as I said, there were so many inside jokes, and they did takeoffs on JFK, the movie. Mm-hmm. And they did takeoffs, mm-hmm. obviously, on O.J. with Jackie Chiles and mm-hmm. that whole thing and the thing. And then, you know, the Festivus. I mean, there was just, you know, Crazy Joe DeVoe. I mean, there's all these, you know, with the opera and Pagliacci. I mean, they were yeah. so smart. They were so cleverly written that you say that this show, you know, when you're watching it, you can be impressed as well as laugh, which I always like.
And you feel smart.
Exactly, and you learn something. I yeah. learned more from Twilight Zone. Rod Serling used to drop more references into stuff that I'd look up and say, oh, okay, that's interesting. The guy was very well read, and he dropped mm-hmm. things into his episodes. We don't have too much time left. Let me just say one thing about Mary Tyler Moore to you. So here's my theory on Mary Tyler Moore. And I should say that Jennifer Keeshan Armstrong has written a great book. It's called Seinfeldia. So it comes out this week. Look for it in your bookstore. She wrote a book about Mary Tyler Moore. My view on Mary Tyler Moore's show is that when they decided that it wasn't about Mary and her love life, and that it was the newsroom with Ted and Lou and Murray and Sue Ann, that's when the show became the Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Yeah, it definitely is the, I mean, I hate saying the first because, like, probably someone will dig something up that was before it or whatever. But, like, it's definitely the classic first workplace comedy. You know, we see it all the time now. That was weird then. It was everything was family, you know, nuclear family type stuff. And this really brought the sitcom into the workplace, and it was important that it was about a woman. And it allowed, you know, you could kind of even map out the family structure from the main characters. It's like Mary's sort of a mother figure and Lou's sort of a father figure. You know, it's like they really just, and that is, all those characters are incredible, talking about, you know, that having great characters is the key to a good sitcom. And that's one more example of that.
Well, let me tell you, I had a great conversation. I could talk to you for hours, Jennifer. Jennifer Keeshan Armstrong, her new book is called Seinfeldia. If you're a fan of Seinfeld, if you're a fan of history of television, it's a must read. I flew through this thing. It's written in a nice, breezy way, informative, fun, and funny, just like the show. Good luck with it. Great talking to you. And it's nice to see a local gal do good.
Thank you very much.
Take care, Jennifer.
Bye.
Great. That's Jennifer Keeshan Armstrong, the author of Seinfeldia. Pick it up this week at your favorite bookstore. Right now, it is about 7 o'clock, almost 7:01. The news is sponsored by Fog You Mold. And here at 7:01 is Roger Badish. No, that is not Guns N' Roses. That's actually Kiss.
What? Kiss? Why Kiss?
Because that's Detroit Rock City, and we're going to be talking about Detroit Rock City in the next segment here with author Tom Stanton, but I wanted to mention a few things. First of all, hey, it's me, Elton Jim Toronto, here with you, filling in for Brian Noonan this evening. Be on until 9 o'clock. Hope you'll stay tuned. We've got some sports talk with Mark Vasco a little later in the show, and then we'll talk to Karen Conti on some legal stuff. And I'm just enjoying sitting out here on Michigan Avenue looking at the beautiful people, waving to them. You got to love the summer with the clothes. These three gals right here. Now they're blushing. But, yeah, that's what you say, Jim, what do you miss about being on the radio in the afternoon? I miss the summer. With the sundresses. But as I said to Mark Carmen when I started the show, around 4:30, usually in July, the sun would hit the left side of the Wrigley building. And I don't care what you were wearing underneath your sundress. That angle wasn't bad. Anyway, I want to tell the folks here, if you would be interested, and we're going to give something away, which is always good on the radio. People always love free stuff. And so we're happy to give some free stuff away today. And also get a little self-promotion at the same time. I'm appearing in a play opening this Friday in Crystal Lake, downtown Crystal Lake at the Rao Theater, a beautiful theater. It's a play put on by the William Street Repertory Company. And the play is called Art. And there's just three guys. There's me and two other people. There's Todd Kent and and Ivan Ewart. And it's a 1998 Tony Award winning play for best play. Also won the Olivier Award in London for the best comedy. And it's about three friends and the friendship and the roots of friendship and just how deep do friendships go and are they what we think they are when one of the friends buys a white painting and another friend, namely me, just can't understand why you would spend a lot of money on a white painting. And the whole thing goes through a lot of shifts and questions as well as comedy. It's really a fun show, and it will be going throughout the entire month of July. We start July 8th. That's Friday. We go through July 31st on the weekends, Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. You can go to WSREP.org for the exact show times and show dates, because there's another show also running concurrently on those weekends, and we're sort of in repertory there. And the box office number is 815-356-9212. So Rao Theater, downtown Crystal Lake, some really nice downtown area, some nice bars and restaurants to really heighten the theater experience. So if you want to come out and see Elton Jim in the flesh, I would really appreciate it, because I'm sure they cast me because of my box office power. So, I need to put some butts in the seats, folks.
Wait a minute. We're going to see you in the flesh?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that this was a risque type of performance.
Oh, no, not that flesh.
Oh, you're going to have a costume on.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to make sure. Yeah.
Yeah, the play is called Art. It's by Yasmina Reza, and it's a great show. I saw it on Broadway. It opened initially with Alan Alda and Victor Garber and Alfred Molina. And Alan Alda played my part. And
He just can't hold a candle to you, though.
No.
No.
I mean, you know, Hawkeye, Schmawkeye.
Yeah.
Give me a break.
Whoop-de-doo.
Yeah. But anyway, what I'm going to do, there's another show running that starts the week after us and goes the week after us as well. But it will also be on Saturday. Sometimes we will be off on one day or not. It's a musical called Title of Show. And there's also a show on July 10th. Just a one-shot, one-man show called You Only Shoot the Ones You Love. So I've been given some tickets by the theater to give away here on the show today.
Wow.
So I'm going to give I've been delinquent in my duties. I should have given one every half hour, but I'm going to give them away. So I'm going to give three pairs right now, and then I'll give the rest of out as the show goes on. So the seventh caller will win tickets to see Art, the play that I'm in. The 14th caller will get tickets to see Title of Show, and the 21st caller will get tickets to see You Only Shoot the Ones You Love. Now, that show is only on July 10th. That's just a one-shot deal. For Art and Title of Show, if you win those tickets, those are for any day you choose during the run, and we will give you the phone number to call the box office, and they will have your name, and you'll be able to do that. So 7th, 14th, and 21 will get tickets to see some shows at the Rao Theater, or the Rao, I should say, the Rao Center for the Arts in
Excellent.
Crystal Lake. But I will be. I've been in rehearsals for the last month, and wow, it's been 4 or 5 hours of rehearsals, and it's a drive for me to get out to Crystal Lake.
Yeah, but you command the stage when you're there.
This is what I hear. Yes, yeah. I mean, I have no awards to prove it.
Need the awards when the public's acceptance of you.
Well, like I said, it's going to be interesting to see. Hopefully we get some nice audiences out there. It's really a fun show. It's a great show. And only three people. It's not even that long, too. It's only like an hour and a half. No intermission. So you can go see the show. Go out for drinks and dinner afterwards.
Sure.
It's really a perfect thing. And it is really a fun show to do. So I hope if you have some time over the next month in July, you'll take a ride out to Crystal Lake and see yours truly. And if you do, please stay out in the lobby. I always come out and say hi if there's somebody to chat to. So
hopefully we'll
see that. Well, now I want to talk to someone who I have known for a while, and I'm very proud of the fact that that he is on with me, because he has become quite the author. He's written like 4 or 5 books, all kind of sports-related books, and he's got a new one out. In fact, he was just in Chicago a couple of weeks ago for the Lit Fest, the Trib Lit Fest, and did a panel here. Tom Stanton, are you there?
I'm here, Jim. It's good to be with you.
How are you doing?
Doing well. I mean, we need to tell everybody that I knew you before the Elton
yes.
came for your name. You
before
know.
I was out. Yeah, in fact, I have to thank Tom Stanton, the author of the new book called Terror in the City of Champions, which we will be talking about. But it was because of Tom Stanton, clearly, without a doubt, unequivocally, because of Tom Stanton, that I met Elton John. There's no doubt. Tom and I met him for the first time, what was it, 93, wasn't it?
That sounds about right.
Yeah, it was 93 in Boston, and we were backstage at the old Boston Garden, and we got a chance to meet Elton because Tom's a big Elton John fan and started an Elton John fan magazine that I wrote for, and that's how we met, and we became very good friends and remain that till today. And Tom was kind enough to take me backstage with him, and as we waited for Elton, when Elton walked in the room finally, about 5 minutes before the show started, we turned around and Tom knocked down about four bottles of beer right off the table. They all spilled all over the floor. Elton walks in and like, what the heck? He almost turned around. Yeah, we weren't scary.
Before that, Jim,
we weren't scary enough.
We had snuck in. We were in the green room waiting, evidently. Yeah. Thought we were missing out.
Oh, right.
We followed Roger Clemens in for his meeting with Elton and got kicked out.
Right.
I thought it was all going downhill there.
I forgot about that. Yeah, Roger Clemens was we were in Boston, and Roger Clemens was pitching at that time for the Red Sox. And Elton John's a huge sports fan, a big baseball fan. And so while we're waiting in the waiting room, Roger Clemens comes in with this big party of friends and family, and Elton's assistant says, "Okay, let's go." So we figure, well, we're going to go in because we've been waiting for an hour, and so we walk in with Roger Clemens' family, and pretty soon, all of a sudden, Elton's assistant comes up and says, "Guys, you need to wait out here," and the funny thing is, now we were sitting in a room with Roger Clemens. He is at pretty much the height of his powers at that point. And you know what? We didn't care. Here's Roger the Rocket Clemens. People would be killing to sit in the... We were in a room with only four people. And we didn't even say hi to him.
He'd only been around a couple seasons.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we didn't even care. We didn't even care because Elton was in the other room.
There's only one Rocket Man.
Yeah, exactly. No kidding. Well, Tom, I'm glad to talk to you about your new book. It just come out a few weeks ago. So tell me about Terror in the City of Champions.
Yeah, well, it's a long lost story that was massive at the time in the mid '30s. It was throughout the Midwest. It was a terrorist group called the Black Legion, kind of like a Klan on steroids. That was secret society killing dozens of people undetected, and it was happening throughout the Midwest, but I'm focused on Detroit because at that point Detroit was struggling through the Great Depression, 40% unemployment rate, dour times except for this one bright spot where the Detroit teams were all winning championships. The Tigers won the World Series. A few weeks later, the Lions won a championship, and gosh, that's never happened in my life. And then
you're talking to somebody from Chicago. Give me a break.
Well, actually, when we won that 35 World Series, it was against the Cubs, actually.
But... Oh, thanks a lot for that little sticker there, little stinger.
Yeah, and then the Red Wings won the Stanley Cup, and Joe Louis, in the meantime, was an undefeated, uncrowned champion. So this whole city is growing massively crazy for the sports successes. But in the meantime, this nefarious group is doing its nasty work, killing people, hatching plots to try to eliminate entire populations.
How did you find out about this, or how did you learn about this?
You know, one of my uncles used to tell the story.
Was in the Black Legion?
He wasn't in the Black Legion because he was a Catholic, and he would have been one of the archenemies, but he always told this story about thinking that he was being abducted by the Black Legion when, in fact, he was with some undercover cops who were arresting him, but because it was an unmarked car, he thought he was being taken for a night ride and was going to end up dead in a ditch. But so I'd heard about it then, and then as I worked on my other books over time, occasionally this would pop up, and it was such a big deal at the time. It's always amazing to me why some stories fade from history and you don't hear about them anymore, and others become very prominent. But at the time, I mean, there was a Humphrey Bogart movie that came out as a result of the Black.
What was the name of the movie?
It's called The Black Legion. It was amazingly. Yeah,
there you go. Yeah. Well, you know what's funny? I mean, I don't know how directly comparable this is. But there was a huge book written several years ago called Murder in the White City, which deals with Chicago. And is it the Columbian Exhibition or the World's Fair? Back here in the 1890s. And meanwhile, while the whole world is converging on Chicago, there's a mass murderer on the South Side, killing people and butchering people. And it's kind of similar in that you've got the same kind of scenario where you've got this amazing run of sports where the city is excited and proud of itself. And meanwhile, you've got this dark underbelly going on at the same time.
It's the eternal story of the light and darkness doing battle. And it overlaps. I mean, these Black Legionnaires, it turns out, were baseball fans and sports fans, which is really ironic in the Tiger sense because one of their stars was a Jewish first baseman, Hank Greenberg.
Oh, my goodness, Hank. Yeah, he had a very – there was a great documentary about him a few years ago.
Right, right. And he's playing next to the other big star on the team is this very devout Catholic second baseman, Charlie Carringer. So the Black Legion is planning its crimes around the Tiger schedule.
Oh, my God.
You know, so it's not to miss the World Series game. You know, we can wait till the game is over before we tie this guy to a tree and whip him.
Oh, my gosh. Well, hold on for a second, Tom. I'm going to get a quick break. We're talking to Tom Stanton. He's the author of a new book called Terror in the City of Champions, Murder, Baseball, and the Secret Society That Shocked Depression-Area Detroit. Can you get any more in that title, Tom?
We always try.
The book is actually oversized just to fit the title.
It's all about the keyword search.
There you go. Right, tags, Twitter tags. We've got Tom Stanton after this. This is Elton Jim Toronto here with you at WGN, filling in for Brian Noonan. We could be back right after this with more. Elton Jim Toronto here with you on WGN AM 720, filling in for Brian Noonan. Be here till 9 o'clock. We'll be talking some sports with Mark Vasco and some legal stuff with Karen Conti and the rest of the show here. But right now, we are talking to author Tom Stanton, who has just finished and released his latest book called Terror in the City of Champions. And if you Google Tom, you will notice that he has written some other sports-related books over the last several years, called Ty and the Babe, Hank Aaron, The Home Run That Changed America, The Road to Cooperstown, and The Final Season, which was his first book. And I believe, Tom, am I in that book?
I think you do make an appearance.
I think I may make an appearance because it was a really cool idea that Tom had. He's from Detroit, and what was The Final Season about?
You know, we were saying goodbye to our ballpark where four generations, in my case, of my family had shared the game, Tiger Stadium. And I went to all 81 home games, but it wasn't so much about the baseball, it was about the relationships there. And I think we went to a game or two.
Yeah, as luck would have it, I came out to visit Tom, and that weekend that I came out, he's like, well, look, I'll be happy to, you know, if you guys want to come out, but I've got to go to baseball games because I'm writing this book and I've got to go. And as luck would have it, though, the White Sox were in town.
Yeah.
So I got to at least see the Chicago team.
I was told the real story was that my wife didn't divorce me during that season.
I don't blame you. Yeah. That'd be a little patience, I would think, would be involved to go to 81 baseball games. But so tell us a little. In some of the notes that I saw about the book here, apparently it's called Terror in the City of Champions, and it's about how there was kind of a Ku Klux Klan group rummaging through Detroit, killing people and plotting against people that they hated, basically a hate group. Meanwhile, Detroit is basking in the glow of sports champions, the Tigers, the Lions, and the Red Wings, all winning their championships in their respective sports, and Joe Louis, the heavyweight champion of the world. And meanwhile, and I mentioned the connection between the devil and the White City about here in Chicago. According to what I had read about this, so J. Edgar Hoover knew about this Black Legion and didn't really do much.
He didn't seem very interested. I don't know. You know, one of two reasons for that. Either he agreed with some of their mission, not necessarily the killing folks, but the anti-communism, anti-socialism, anti-unionism, anti-progressivism. you know, that might have fit with his worldview. But the other part was in the Midwest, and particularly in Detroit, the Black Legion was being used for political purposes by Republicans. And if you investigate the Black Legion, then you probably should be investigating the Klan down south, which was being used successfully by Democrats. And so, you know, he's going to get it politically from both sides. So he did everything he could not to dig deep into the investigation, which was a shame. I mean, this is a group that had tens of thousands of members. But the thing was, Jim, if you were a lot of them might be reluctant members, because if you were a white Protestant guy, one of your friends might come invite you to a card party or out for drinking or to a barbecue, and pretty soon you find that you're, you know, out in the dark or in a darkened room or out in a darkened field surrounded by guys in black hoods and gowns with, you know, with weapons pointed at you, and you're taking an oath for fear of life.
Right, exactly, yeah.
That you're going to give your life to this organization and do whatever crimes its leaders order you to do. So there were a lot of reluctant members as well as those who embraced the mission.
And so you also talk about the teams. Now, has that ever been duplicated in terms of like one city having that many champions in 1 year?
Not in terms of those three. Not in terms of the Jerry Stanley Cup NFL title within an 8-month period within the.
Wow, that had to have been a crazy. I mean, if you're a sports fan, that had to have been amazing. What's really neat about this book, like I said, is that you bring in the sports angle of something that you're obviously very interested in, and you know a lot about Detroit sports, and then you bring in this. And as I should say, Tom, in a previous life, owned a local newspaper in a Detroit community, and so you certainly are bringing in your news hound kind of experience as well as your passion for sports. So this had to have been a pretty satisfying book to write.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we went through, it's a serious journalistic research. I went through 900 plus pages of FBI files, among a whole lot of other stuff. But, you know, there are actually some Chicago connections to the story too, Jim. I don't know if you're aware of it, but Joe Louis, when he was training at that stage early in his career, he's falling in love with a Chicago woman that he's going to marry, and his trainers are both based in Chicago, and he's living in Chicago. And, you know, many of his early professional fights are actually taking place in Chicago.
Oh, Chicago was the boxing mecca of the world, the Chicago Stadium. I mean, that's where many of the world champion fights were held for many, many years.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you had a couple of these trainers that were really well-known that were there. And with Joe Louis, the thing was, you know, he was having trouble getting a shot at the title because he's African-American. And, you know, not too long prior to, they had this experience with Jack Johnson, who was kind of in-your-face African-American guy who was a gloating victor. And, you know, when he beat one of the white former white champions, you know, there were race riots. And so the boxing world was reluctant to give Joe Louis a chance, and so he had to behave in a certain way that would make him less of a racial threat. But you're right. You know, you had Arcadia Gardens in Chicago, which is where some of these fights were, in the Chicago Stadium you mentioned, and it was quite a hotbed of boxing.
Oh, definitely. Well, I'm so happy and proud of you, Tom. You've done quite a you've got a very impressive body of work here, and obviously this was a labor of love. Tom Stanton, the author of Terror in the City of Champions, it is available now at your bookstore. Is it on Amazon and everywhere else too?
Yep, it's all the usual spots.
Great. Well, good luck with the book. It's great to talk to you, Tom, and I'm going to make it out there soon. We haven't seen each other. It's been way too long.
Sounds great, Jim. Take care.
All right. That's Tom Stanton, the author of Terror in the City of Champions. It's 7:31 here at WGN. I'm Elton Jim, Toronto, filling in for Brian Noonan. We'll be talking a little sports at the other end of this newscast. But right now, it's 7:32, and here's Roger Badish.
It's been a great score! Carolina, and it's 3-2. The deal is over to Taves, then back along. Shawfield off to the outside. Got it to him. Score!
Elton Jim Toronto here at WGN AM 720 on a Sunday night. Be here till 9 o'clock. And we're going to talk a little sports with Mark Vasco. But first, I want to give away some tickets again. As I said, I will be appearing in the play Art at the Rao Center for the Arts in downtown Crystal Lake. I've got two tickets for any time of the run that you'd like. The show runs from July 8th through the 31st on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. You can go to WSREP.org for ticket information. Or box office number is 815-356-9212. But right now I'm going to give away two free tickets, and you can go to any show during the run for the play Art, of which I am in, which starts this Friday, July 8th, and runs through July 31st. So seventh caller here at 312-981-7200 will get those, and I'd love to see you out there. Hopefully you can stick around some nice restaurants and bars in downtown Crystal Lake. And I will always come out to the lobby and chat if anybody's out there that knows me. So we'll have some nice time at the theater. Right now, we're going to have some fun time here in the studio with Mark Vasco. How you doing there, Marco?
Very good. Jimmy T, what's the word?
Well, I want to talk to you a little sports here because our Blackhawks.
I know. It's been an interesting couple of weeks.
Yeah, we've got the... we've got the convention coming up. It's going to be a very interesting Blackhawk convention in a couple of weeks, as I'm sure fans are going to have lots to be talking about and lots of questions for the Blackhawk hierarchy here. But what is your take on what the salary cap and how it has decimated the Blackhawks the last 4 to 5 years?
Well, it really has. I mean, if this was a baseball, we'd still be winning cups. Because you have to worry about that. Or even if it's basketball where you can just pay the salary, where you can pay the luxury tax or
and who cares?
Go over and whatever.
Yeah,
we would have paid it.
This and the NHL is
a hard cap. And they have made some mistakes. I mean, they have. I mean, we basically traded away Sharp to save money and got basically nothing in return. Because the defenseman we got for him, we've already let go because he didn't really do anything.
Yeah.
And then they made a decision to, let Oduya go.
That I'll tell you, I remember I was very surprised, but once again, I mean, they've had their hands tied, but
right.
I thought that, gosh, if there's some creative accounting, Johnny Oduya is a guy you want to have on that team.
And they gave Bickle way too much money, and that hamstrung them as well.
Well, but, let's think back now. At that moment, Bickle was huge in that play, even though he didn't have a good season that year. He had an amazing playoff and an amazing Stanley Cup, and nobody was arguing when he got that contract. So let's be
fair.
But it hurt.
As it turns out.
Yes, no doubt about that.
That made the last couple of years difficult now. And now Shaw, you missed on Shaw. Actually 6 years he gets with the Canadiens for $3.9 million per. And even his agent said they did all they could do. They came up to $3 million a year, but that's all they could afford because of the cap.
Yeah.
And it's hard to turn down almost
million.
$6 million basically over 6 years.
Yeah.
But at the same point, how many millions can you spend?
Well, first of all, what Andrew Shaw should have done was called up Brian Saad.
I know.
Now, and the Canadians are a different animal than Columbus Blue Jackets.
Right, yes.
But still, the Canadians didn't make the playoffs either.
Well, no, but that sweater does mean more than the jacket sweater does.
Yes, without a doubt. But my point is
right.
that, in Chicago, there are few times. Now, certainly in Montreal, hockey is unbelievable. I've been to the Hockey Hall of Fame, and basically the Hockey Hall of Fame is basically the Montreal Canadiens team.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, it's just everywhere. So, yeah, I mean, he's going to be in a hockey town, no doubt about that. But at the same time, Chicago is not only a hockey town, it's a winning hockey town.
All right.
And I wonder if he could have not made that $1 million or whatever it was up in endorsements or just the fact of how many chances do you get to play on a team like this that has this core of Kane and Taves and Seabrook and Duncan Keith.
You're preaching to the converted here. I mean, I completely agree. Well, and that's why we got Brian Campbell back.
Right. How about
Brian
that?
Brian Campbell. Yeah.
On a discount.
He turned down over $4 million
right.
to take the $2 million
right.
to come here. So he gets it.
He
Saad
gets it.
Did not get it.
Well, he gets it because he's been away.
Well, exactly.
And he knows what he's missing.
It wasn't here.
Exactly. And, and that's the thing is that, I mean, don't forget, these guys are young, and especially guys like Brian Saad and now Shaw,
you know, they grew up, they came up through the system. They won cups so early right. in their careers that right. they act like, well, this happens all the time. And wait till you go away and see how often it doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. And there were some players that went their whole careers. There were Ernie Bankses of hockey.
Oh, absolutely.
Who never won a cup. And
that locker room isn't as much fun as ours. And all the, you know, and that coach isn't as good as ours. And all those things you learn.
And the Hawks are the Blackhawks organization, not only is it first class from top to bottom, but the players are treated with an incredible respect.
And the biggest houses in the league. You know, there's never an empty seat and all
so,
this kind of
I mean,
things.
I understand the money you take in hockey. You know, in one shot, a guy's career is over. You can hit in the head, hit in the leg. I mean, I understand that. But at the same time, the experience of what you're going through is also needs to be taken into consideration. And it seems like when that comes, there's very few players that take that into consideration. They go for the money, and then they...
And the other interesting thing that Brian Campbell just said was the team leader. That means a lot.
Right.
You know, and he's, I'm coming back to the captain.
Right.
You know, and Taves, that, you know, he's the pro.
Yeah.
And a guy like Campbell, who's been around, he's not a young kid anymore, appreciates what it's like to be on a team, you know, where everybody's going in the same direction because the one guy's pulling you there, and a classy guy like Taves.
Yeah, well, I tell you, I mean, you can't fault the Blackhawks. As I said, hey, every team makes mistakes.
Right.
I think overall, I think you have to be impressed with Stan Bowman's job.
Oh, absolutely. You're not going to get 100%.
No,
it's not.
But think about over the last 5 years, we're talking about this cap, and it's a hard cap, meaning that there are no ifs, ands, or buts. There's no luxury taxes. There's no penalties you pay. You have to be underneath, I think it's what, $72, $73 million?
I think they'll risen out,
this year. So, think about the players that we Brandon Saad, Patrick Kane, or Patrick Sharp,
right.
now Andrew Shaw,
right.
Aduya.
Yeah.
We lost Ladd.
Yeah.
We
yeah.
lost Letty.
Yep.
We lost
other
guys.
You're not cheering me up at
I
all.
I mean, this is a whole, that's a whole line.
I know.
That's a whole all-star line on this team that, to your point earlier, if there was no cap, you know, These would be dynasties. Listen to those guys.
You know,
those guys were on one team.
Oh, I know.
And I'm not even counting Taves and Kane.
I mean, those Bulls 6 championships would be in doubt here with the Hawks just because you wouldn't have lost all those guys. Well, you know, and you and I are Cubs guys. That's the thing I'm worried about with the Cubs. Now, I know there's no cap, but there's only so much money to go around.
Exactly.
All those
Now that they won't let them sell beer in the plaza.
I mean, all those young kids are all making peanuts right now.
Yeah,
but eventually they're all going to cash in.
Yeah. Oh,
and
yeah.
can you pay all of those guys all that comes due? So they better win early.
Yeah, that's
they
the
might
price,
break up too, even without a cap.
That's the price of success.
Right.
Here's the thing that bugs me though. Now, obviously, the hard cap is in for two reasons. First of all, and I didn't even realize this, but apparently Bill Wirtz was one of the proponents of the hard cap.
Well, naturally.
Because back then, hockey and still. As a sport, while you can't take Chicago, if you're new to the game of hockey,
right.
you can't take Chicago as an example because Chicago has loved hockey for years, and now that it's been so successful, it's dominated the city. But all around the country, hockey is still fighting. It's that fourth sport.
Absolutely.
So let me take you in the Wayback Machine.
Already.
When you and I were youngsters.
Yes.
When there was television. When
black and white
back in their days when there was no new ESPN in baseball, for instance, when there were dynasties, and on football when there was no, once again, there was just, you know, ABC on Monday night and Channel 2 and Channel 5. That's where football was. You saw your dynasties in football, like the Cowboys or the Pittsburgh Steelers or later the 49ers. When they would have these one games of the week, they would always show those teams. In baseball in the 70s, hard to believe, but there was a game of the week on Saturday.
Oh, right.
That was it. Aside from your local team, all you saw was one game a week. And pretty much in the 70s, it was either the Dodgers playing somebody or the Reds. There weren't even many American, maybe the A's, the Oakland A's.
Well, the Sunday NBA game of the week was you saw three. It was the Knicks, the Celtics, or the Sixers. Those were combination of those three teams played each other was the Sunday game. You didn't see any other NBA
maybe
teams.
Portland with Bill Walton was out.
Maybe.
But here's my point. But as a fan growing up, as a young kid learning about these sports,
I know they're looking for parity as well, so that one team isn't too dominant. But it was those dynasty teams that you saw every week, even if they weren't from your town, that you saw the game being played at a top level.
Oh, yeah.
So now you said, I like this sport. Let me look at my local team. But first, I got turned on by the sport being played. Well, I can still rattle off the starting lineup of the Cincinnati Reds from 1975.
Oh, yeah,
because
the big red machine where they were it. Absolutely.
Because they were on every week. And so my point is, at this point where hockey is, instead of worrying about parity at this point, they should either raise this cap or loosen it up with the luxury taxes and allow some of these dynasties to happen, because you're still selling your sport to, I would say, 60 to 75 or 80% of this, of the country are still not hockey fans yet.
Right. No, you're only hurting your product. I completely agree.
So you shouldn't look to break up these teams, because that's what helps people learn about the game, learn about the players, and then they go, well, geez, if the Cowboys are so great, how's my team? If the Reds are so great, how's my team? If the Blackhawks are so great, maybe I will watch the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Well, that's why those outdoor games are losing their luster, because they're trying to get all the teams involved in everything. But if the game isn't any good, then what's the point?
And you have to have good teams playing. You have to have saleable teams and saleable players, so that it's okay that if somebody in Columbus is wearing a Patrick Kane jersey, that's okay for your sport.
For that sport, a dynasty is a good thing.
Exactly, at least at this point.
Yeah,
I agree with you. We're going to take a quick break. I'm talking to Mark Vasco about some Blackhawks. We maybe get into a little Cub talk, because my gosh, what's happening all this summer we've got presumptive nominees. Cubs have been presumptive world champions since April 4th.
Just about. Yeah.
And suddenly the old Chicago paranoia creeping in, but you could see it and hear it. Anyway, I'm Elton Jim Toronto here at WGN 720 a.m. in Chicago, filling in for Brian Noonan. I'll be here till 9 o'clock. We'll be back right after this.
Bryant in the air, deep center. It will go.
Give me that read again, Andre. Give me a read. 4,972 feet.
Three-run homer for Bryant. It's 7-3. Number three. Full house time, baby. Since 1913, he is the first player ever to do this. Three homers and two doubles.
How funny is it that Go Cubs Go song was actually rejected after a couple of years when it was first put out in the 80s? It was by Steve Goodman, who was a noted folk singer here in Chicago, who passed away from cancer at a very young age. But he was a huge Cub fan. In fact, he wrote this other great song,
Dying Cub Fan's Last Request.
Last Request. And but then they get Steve Goodman to write the song for the Cubs, and then everyone hated it. It was like for 1 year, 2 years that they got rid of it, and now 30 years later it comes back. But Elton Jim here, Toronto, with you on WGN, and I'm talking to sports reporter Mark Vasco. We're just talking about our Blackhawks and how at the end of the day, it's very sad to see players like Andrew Shaw. And Tara Vanen, I thought, was a keeper.
Right.
That one was, and if you remember, when they got rid of Tara Vanen, he was basically the throw-in so that Carolina would pay for Bickle.
Right.
Which was sad.
Right.
But everybody said, okay, well, they had to get rid of Bickle so they could pay Shaw, and then they couldn't pay Shaw. And if you remember, now, to show you how hard this cap is and how it is really, now it's not just something that's slightly affecting the Hawks. It's seriously affecting the Hawks. To show how serious this was, the last press conference of the year, Quenneville came out and said, Andrew Shaw is irreplaceable. Irreplaceable.
Except if we can't afford him.
And like Brandon Saad, if you remember, when the Hawks won the cup on the ice, as they are carrying the cup around, Stan Bowman, the general manager of the team, goes up to Brandon Saad and says, we want you on this team. And then they have to get rid of him.
And then, again, because they're not going to take the hometown discount.
I guess.
Well, you know, I was looking at available free agents. We can bring Versteeg back, and we can or Tuomo Ruutu. You want those guys? Because those guys are still out there. So
we all get the same. All we're doing is...
We brought Campbell back. We can bring those guys
and
back.
Don't you think... is there a chance that they would bring Sharp back? Isn't this contract up? Pretty soon?
I don't think it's this year, though.
Oh, but still. You never know.
You never know.
But... Anyway, so we do have the Blackhawks convention coming up, I believe, on the 15th. So certainly that's going to be a hot ticket because Blackhawk fans are passionate at the very least. Yes, and
by the way, for Bulls fans, it looks like Rajon Rondo has agreed to a 2-year deal to be a Bulls. So they do actually have an actual point guard now in Rajon Rondo.
Okay. I tell you, we're talking about the Bulls. Just the Blackhawks, I still think, while it's tough times, when you still have that core of people like...
They're still good.
But there's, there's still good. There's a lot of good teams out there. But it's a shame to see what has had to happen because they have done such a great job of finding this talent and integrating it and making good teams. And then every year they're forced to break them up. Quickly about the Bulls, can I dispel two rumors? There was never a Derrick Rose era.
No, there's no rings to show for
that. No, there's no ring. There's no nothing.
I know.
He's not a legend. He's a ligament.
He had an MVP, then he had a lot of Mark Pryor towel drills.
Yeah,
That's about all he had.
Yeah, I mean, and a horrible attitude.
Oh, yeah, he never said the right thing at all.
I mean, it's just, but this era, there was no era.
No.
Jordan had an era.
Yes, that's an era, folks.
Don't give Derrick Rose an era.
No.
I don't see any banners up there with, that were part of number one's era.
No.
I mean, and think about how crazy he was talking about free agency this year or last year
when the season ended,
have basically paid him to sit with a Nautilus
earn
machine.
Some money before you talk about your next contract.
And I know they loved Noah. They loved him. I understand. He didn't win either.
When he got hurt. It's the same thing as D. Rose. It's like Rose and Noah are nowhere near the players that they were. The Knicks can have them. I would.
Yeah.
Knicks gave Noah like $72 million. He can't run.
I saw something on the internet. I don't know if it was The Onion or not. It said Phil Jackson's just signed Benny the Bull.
Yes, I saw the same thing.
And very quickly, we got run out of time. It's always so short. Time flies by when I talk to you. Look.
The Cubs are going to be fine.
Yeah, we talked about this at the beginning of the season.
They're going to be fine.
I think, every team goes through this. It's 162 games. Teams will go through this. Yes, they lost to the Mets. Okay, New York, and they're a contender, blah, blah, blah. The Cubs are still 9 games up despite all this, folks.
They've got the best record in baseball.
The best record in baseball. So let's hold on. Let's wait.
Fine.
But
they're hurt. The guys are going
to
come back.
Fowler is a huge person to be missing. But it just goes to show you once again that, and I said this at the beginning of the year, it's weird to be a Cub fan and actually say that they're going to win and believe it. We were always in this weird mystical denial.
Oh, right.
But this year, this team is legit. And I think, once again, that's that Chicago paranoia. We're always waiting for the next shoe to drop. We're waiting for the September or October swoon. But this team is different. Madden is different. The team is different. And I think that despite a losing streak, yes, it hurts to hurt. Arrieta is not going to win every game, folks. He's not a machine.
And it doesn't matter if he's not the best pitcher in baseball. If he's the 10th best pitcher in baseball,
we're still okay.
That's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine with me.
So just hold on.
No, they're going to be fine. And it doesn't matter. We don't get an extra prize if they win 116
games.
Win 101 and win the division, that's fine. Again, the Mariners won 116 and didn't even get to the World Series that year. So, that doesn't matter. All I'm looking at, they're still up by 9 games. They're fine.
They're up by 9 games, folks. Yeah.
That's all that matters to me. Win the division. That's all that matters.
Yeah, once again, home field advantage.
The games are still fun. That Bryant game, that homers over doubles game was unbelievable game.
And this guy's, what's so funny is he's quietly hit how many home runs this year? Like 20-some
already?
Like
22 now, I think. Yeah. That Wednesday game.
It's not even the All-Star break.
That 11:30 in the morning game against Cincinnati.
Yeah.
That was a perfect baseball game.
Right.
They couldn't. I watched every minute of that game. I was like, this is the most fun I've ever had watching a baseball. They did everything well. They pitched well, played incredible defense. They got hits when they needed it. I'm just enjoying the fact that they're fun to watch. Yeah, these last couple games, that's going to happen. But by and large, They're just so much fun to watch. And for my team, for that to say that is amazing.
I mean, you look at Baez, who everybody was kind of questioning after last year.
Oh, my gosh, is he a player?
Now the guy is really living up to his hype. Cub fans, we've got a good team.
They bring up that Contreras kid. He can play.
They're a good team, and every team goes through losing streaks. And as we said before, they're 9 games up. Just calm down.
Three or four losses in a row or 6 out of 8 is not the end.
Anything can happen. I'm not saying World Series yet, but they're up by 9 games. And and we're halfway through. They're going to be okay.
Yeah, no. So. Just enjoy it.
Anyway.
Take a pill, relax.
Yeah. Oh, my God, it's so funny. But I am hoping our Blackhawks can get over this adversity because, my gosh, to see the great teams and the great players and the good people. Those guys are – I've met a lot of those guys. And they were really good guys, too. And they were pros. And to see them leave is kind of tough. But anyway, Mark Vasco. Local sports caster. It's always fun to talk sports.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you. It is right here, top of the hour, 8 o'clock. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. I'm Elton Jim Toronto. I'm filling in for Brian Noonan. We'll be here for another hour or so. Hope you'll stay tuned. Right now, it's 8 o'clock, and it's Roger Badish with the news. Tonight, the jungle is right here at WGN AM 720, and it's also a few miles down on Chicago's lakefront at Soldier Field. Now, Guns N' Roses in town for the second of their two-night stand here. They played on Friday, and just so you know, if you are going out to the show, it's about, 6 minutes after 8. Guns N' Roses is notoriously late. There are some times that they would have, 8 o'clock shows, and they wouldn't even come out until midnight or 1 o'clock. Now, I don't think they're going to do that because there are some curfews that go on outside, but I think Alice in Chains is opening for them anyway, so they're not going to come on until a little later. But I'm sure that the lake is rocking. And of course, what's not happening at the lake, Roger, is we won't have a Star Wars museum.
Oh, don't be so sad, big guy.
In the words of...
It's okay.
In the words of Dr. Smith from Lost in Space, oh, dear. Oh, the pain. Where's my space museum?
We need to talk you down, dude.
Oh, George Lucas, how could you do this to me? You can take Kristen Can. I mean, You know,
it would have been fun to have it here.
Well, here's my take on this. You want my take on this, Raj?
You know, Jim, I've been wondering what your thoughts were on the loss to Chicago of the George Lucas Museum of the Narrative Arts.
How fortuitous, then, that I am here.
That's amazing.
Behind this microphone and able to share my take on this with you since you were wondering.
I was. I am. I
believe, I said this 2 years ago, you can find the tape. When this first happened, I thought that Chicago was being used as a pawn because George Lucas is from California. He's from San Francisco. They shot him down. And I think, Rahm Emanuel knows Melody Hobson, George Lucas's wife, and he may have said,
she's from Chicago.
And she said, look, can you help us out here? Can you throw Chicago's hat in the ring? Like, maybe you're interested to get San Francisco off the dime here and realize that they might lose it. And I'm sure Rahm says, oh, sure, I'm sure. Let's see. George Lucas only has all the money in the world. So maybe if I do this favor for him, maybe, he'll do a favor for me. So I don't think that there was ever really. Now, I think initially, I don't think this was legit. Now, that's just me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as it went down the road, I think maybe they were saying, well, maybe we could pull this off. Maybe it would work. But, he wanted it by water. That was the deal killer. He wanted it by water. They were offering these other sites, and it was clear he wanted what he wanted. But I never thought that George Lucas really was a proponent of this as far as Chicago for the site. Movies are made in California. Mm-hmm. Chicago really has no connection to Star Wars at all. However, if George Lucas was really serious about having Chicago get this, all he had to do was to go out there in that parking lot and hold a press conference and say on all the local television news, my name is George Lucas. I am now, Chicago is now my adopted city. I love this city, and I want to share my museum with the people of my new adopted city. That's all he has to say. Chicago people would have fallen in love with George Lucas in a second. This wouldn't have seemed like some political backroom, deal. And I guarantee you, there would have been some compromise, and he would have gotten the museum here. I just, for the fact that he never came out and embraced Chicago. Did he? Did I miss it?
No. To my knowledge, he never came out in public, not just publicly speaking, like through a press release or something. But I don't think I ever remember seeing him out, like with the mayor or someone else.
That's what I mean.
Talking it up.
Yeah, and so to me, I mean, he had his wife out there, and then she made some unfortunate kind of comments that sort of played a race card, which really didn't help matters. But my point is that George Lucas, Chicago loves celebrities. We are celebrity, excited. If anybody mentions Chicago, if anybody celebrity comes to Chicago, God forbid. I mean, George Lucas does live here at some time with his wife. Not a lot, I don't think, but he still calls Chicago home to some extent since she's from here and lives here. And so all he had to do was say, hey, Chicago, you're my city. We would have been, the people would have fallen head over heels. So that's my point is, I don't think he really wanted to happen here.
Yeah, well, a lot of people agree with you.
Yeah, I don't know. Now, obviously, it came down to a court case. It was basically the judge who decided this, because by him allowing that court case, it gave the Friends of the Park a chance to continue their lawsuit.
Technically, he allowed the court case, but it was never decided. There was no decision.
Exactly. Well, because they finally decided to just pull the plug on it. But my point is, if there was such a groundswell of support, and Rahm Emanuel claims that 80% of the people were in favor of it. Yeah, they were in favor of it if you asked them a question. But my point is, I didn't see people walking around downtown with Chewbacca costumes on. Or Stormtrooper, we want Star Wars.
There was not a protest, but a show of support. There was a gathering out by the, I think, near McCormick Place at some point. They walked from downtown to McCormick Place, but it was not a large gathering.
No, and my point is it wasn't sustained.
Right.
This has been a two-year process.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about one day when five guys put on a Darth Vader helmet and walked down the street. You know, and so it just didn't seem like there was on paper, there was no connection to Chicago, in my view. And I really never thought that George Lucas, and now, of course, he's going back to California, and we'll see what happens. I think that's where he always wanted it. And if that is the case, Chicago looks like they got used here, I think. I don't know. I mean.
Well, but then if he was trying to strong arm San Francisco authorities into giving him a better deal or a better site, because the last site I heard them talking about was an island out in the middle of the bay where you have to take a ferry to get to.
Right.
It's not exactly an easy place to go to a museum. So if he was trying to do that, it really didn't work because Chicago, with the lawsuit, Chicago basically kind of rolled over. There was no big threat to San Francisco.
Well, no, but my point is San Francisco at least now is back reconsidering.
Well, yeah.
They kicked him. They said no.
Yeah.
And now there's negotiations again. And I think that's all that he wanted. So we'll see.
Yeah.
I mean, it certainly would have been cool to have a place like that, because it would have been an international destination.
Oh, big time.
Yeah.
Big time. Tons of tourism, big dollars coming into town. And it wasn't just going to be a museum of his stuff. I've seen the diagrams. I saw some of the plans. And when you have a museum like that, it's just like the Museum of Science and Industry. You are putting together educational programs. You're bringing in kids from all the schools. People will be coming there. They are learning new things. I saw it as a place because, you know, I taught broadcasting. And part of that, for 20 years, I also taught film production. And we made, you know, 5 student films, which won awards all over the world.
Were you Yoda?
No, I was not Yoda.
Oh, I thought maybe that's where you were going with that.
No. What I'm saying is it would have been a great resource for students who wanted to get into the business of film and video production. There is, you know, Chicago was Hollywood before Hollywood.
Yeah,
Chicago has a great history
in
the beginning
Chaplin
of film
movies,
production.
Sir. Charlie Chaplin made
the SNA studios in Chicago were world famous in the early days of film production. And I think having the museum here could have been an opportunity for the city to kind of rekindle. We still have a lot of movies made here. We have two huge soundstage production houses in town. Look at the TV series that are being produced here.
Oh yeah, we certainly made our share of movies over the last 30 years here. There's no doubt about that. I just think that when you think of George Lucas and you think of Star Wars, regardless of whether it was going to be a narrative museum, whatever they called it.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that he wanted it. If he wanted it here, he would have fought for it. If you want something, you fight for it. I never saw his fight.
Well, here was his fight. His fight was in dollars. He says, here's how much I'm putting up. That should be good enough.
I know, but you know what? You need a little passion.
Right. No, I know.
You need some of the force, George.
I got your force right here.
Hey-o! After the break here, we're going to talk to Mick Kaler with another exciting and fun edition of the Pop Culture Club. I've got a few topics online here, and as I said, Chicago right now, and we're in the midst of it now, we are Paradise City. So we're going to not only talk about a little about Guns N' Roses, but more importantly, with Mick, I want to talk about now that Guns N' Roses has reunited, how many teams how many groups are left that you want to see reunite?
Oh, that haven't.
That have.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what we're going to sort of talk about because, you know, the Police have gotten back together. The Eagles have gotten back together. You know, there are a lot of these bands that we wondered if they ever would. They have, because as I said before, the money was just too good.
Oh, sure.
And so now there's a few out there. Their time is running out on these guys. if you're gonna get together or cash in, you got to do it soon. The window's closing. Paul Simon is 74. He said he actually may retire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not fun anymore.
No.
Yeah.
So, age happens to everyone. And they've got a small window for not only you and your talent, but it's got a small window for your audience. Because when your audience goes.
That's true.
Then they're gone as well.
Yeah.
And there's not many people that are willing to spend $500 on a ticket anymore. So.
Yeah, the only ticket I'm going to get that's going to cost that much is if I'm out getting arrested. That's. But I'm telling you, folks.
But you know.
Yeah, but you know.
But you know. How about that Roger Bettis? Ain't he wild? Hey, did you ever see Joey Heatherton? Ain't she wild?
Ain't she wild? And then after you're done with Mick, if you would allow me a minute or two.
What's that?
I've got a great place for people to go to tomorrow.
Oh. Well, we'll certainly indulge you.
Sounds great.
All right. We'll be back right after this. Elton Jim Toronto here, filling in for Brian Noonan tonight. We were expecting to have Karen Conti in to do her legal segment, but I don't know if the lines got crossed, but Karen is not here. Maybe she's enjoying the Guns N' Roses.
Maybe she's with Orion at the Guns N' Roses concert. Earlier today, we had Orion live from the parking lot at Soldier Field. Orion is wearing his Slash top hat, and his wife and he, Gloria and Orion, may be following them to their next couple of shows in the Midwest. And by the way,
I heard about that. And you know, the other thing is, I heard Orion is a big fan of Van Halen, and he's going to wear the David Lee Roth leather chaps.
I was never a fan of Sammy Hagar.
You didn't like Van Hagar, right?
No. And by the way, corn contracts down 3% at the close.
Pork belly's up 3.
The market will be closed tomorrow for the 4th of July holiday.
I was going to suggest, pal, I think Karen Conti might be playing lead guitar for Alice in Chains now.
It's Karen in Chains.
Yeah, there you go. They changed the name.
There you go. Well, they didn't really, you know, you have to have at least one surviving member to have that image. So I don't know if Alice is back in the Alice in Chains group. So I think they got Karen.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that Karma Chameleon can only mean one thing. It's Pop Culture Club. Now, with, of course, Mick Kaylor, noted radio producer and noted parody songwriter. You've been getting quite a few songs on the WGN Morning News the last couple of weeks,
yeah,
haven't you,
Mick?
Yeah,
we had a couple this week. We had one about our old song, Al Flash and I did a song called Selfies because it was National Camera Day, and they pulled that out. And then Channel 9 Morning News, they had a big audio problem the other day where the last 15 minutes of their show, they had no audio. So instead of Sounds of Silence, I rewrote that song and made it Round of Silence. And we put a video and a song together, and they played it a bunch the next day.
What do you work, like at the Brill Building?
Yeah.
That's Are you just pumping out songs?
Me, Neil Diamond, and Carole King. We're
yeah,
all
my gosh, it's like that. Something happens, and then Mick just goes and gets a pen and paper out and goes, hey, wait a minute, I could change that song.
I think I could write this one for Dylan. I think he'll like it.
Well, that's always fun to turn that on. Of course, I unfortunately, over the last several weeks, have not been able to watch one of my favorite shows, the Channel 9 Morning News, because I have the Dish Network.
Oh, you got shut out.
That's yeah, crazy. They still, you know, everybody thought, oh, one or day or two or so, they would put the, they would put the station back. They would compromise on their rights fees, whatever it is. And now it's like 2 or 3 weeks. No, Channel 9.
Well, you know what might happen? This might be like when Kramer went on strike when he was a bagel maker on Seinfeld.
Yeah.
And then like a bunch of years later, they raised the minimum wage and he went back to work.
I mean, this one's lasting a little longer. I'm not seeing Cub games. I mean, Mick. How do I, what am I supposed to do at 1 p.m. when Maury's on? You are not the father.
You gotta go online, look for the highlights.
I'm missing my Maury. But anyway, we are doing a segment of the Pop Culture Club. That's why, of course, I played the Karma Chameleon song. Now, once again, this show always works on several levels. There's so much more. It's like a Bullwinkle commercial or a Bullwinkle cartoon. There's so many layers going on here. So it's Pop Culture Club. You get it? We're going to talk about pop culture, but it's kind of a club. So it's a culture club. So I play. Do you get it, Mick?
I'm with you. In fact, I did see the other day at the Chicago Theater, they got the marquee up, and the Culture Club, is coming to the Chicago Theater.
Oh, is that us?
Not us. It's a pop culture.
Oh, it's not the Pop Culture Club. Okay.
Did I say Pop Culture Club? No, I okay. said Culture okay. Club.
So George, so Boy George is going to be in town.
I guess he needs the money. Yeah.
Although, wouldn't it be great if Culture Club toured without Boy George?
It's like, sorry, folks, he's not here.
Well, that plays into our topic here because we're talking about today is, you know, today Chicago is Paradise City.
Yep.
Guns N' Roses just down the street at Soldier Field. Playing, I would assume they're going to be on in a little while. I'm sure Allison
they'll get
Chains.
On as soon as it gets dark enough, yeah.
Well, though, knowing them, they'll get on at 1 in the morning. Remember when Axl Rose wasn't showing up for shows until 1 in the morning?
I think I told you, I had a friend who had tickets to the show, and he was taking a cab out to the Rosemont Horizon. They roll by the Four Seasons Hotel.
And there's
Slash was literally sitting there talking to a doorman. And my friend is like, wait a minute. Shouldn't he be like going to the show like I am because I want to go see the concert?
Well, here's the thing. So I was thinking now that Guns N' Roses, they said never in this lifetime would they get together. The Eagles always, of course, said when hell freezes over. So hell has gotten a lot colder.
Yep.
And a lifetime is apparently shorter than they thought. And so these two bands have gotten together. So I'm just thinking it'd be interesting. Are there any bands left that you really want to see reunite?
Well, I would say, and I know what your top one is, so I don't want to spoil it, but mine
Well, what's yours?
Mine would be REM with the original four members.
Nice. Nice.
And I would say they got to do the good songs from the first four or five releases. I mean, once Bill Berry left the band as drummer, I didn't really have any interest in them anymore.
Isn't that crazy? Usually the drummer is like the most disposable. In fact, remember Spinal Tap?
Yeah.
Their drummers used to self-combust.
Well, people forget, you know, Bill Berry, he actually co-wrote a bunch of those songs. I mean, they were all right. It wasn't just Michael Stipe. And
oh,
Peter
did he
Bob.
Really? He wrote a lot of the songs?
They would put it as like they co-wrote and they all did their parts and did things.
I didn't
and
know
Mike,
that.
Mike Mills did, and so did Bill Berry. And then Bill Berry had that aneurysm and he came back to tour. And then he said after that, okay, I'm going to go to my farm and raise soybeans.
Well, I tell you, most drummers, I mean, you know, Keith Moon died. The Who went on. Led Zeppelin didn't go on, but they have done a few different shows, and they brought his son in. A lot of times a drummer seems to be replaceable. I'm not saying anything bad about drummers. I'm just saying is that the drummer a lot of times can be replaceable. But if you want a reunited band, I think you have to have, at least as a rock band, you have to have the lead singer and the lead guitarist.
Well, again, like I said, REM would be my top pick. But again, and I know that Michael Stipe, the lead singer, always said, I don't want to do any greatest hits tours. Well, then I don't want to see you, because guess what? That's what I want to see.
Well, right? I'll tell you, REM is one band, and I actually had that on my list too. And in, just to show how we think the same, and in parentheses, REM original lineup.
That's what you need.
Yeah, and that was, REM is a band where when the drummer left, they lost their spark.
They did.
They were really never the same after Bill Berry left. And it's amazing that because you would just think, oh, they'll go on. Their sound was different. They had a lot of good drummers coming in, but the songs just didn't have that same punch and that same power. So I don't know if they'll ever come back, but if they do, they better bring him back.
Well, the other thing, too, when you mentioned Guns N' Roses, Guns N' Roses drummer used to be Steven Adler.
Right.
Till he drank so much that his stomach exploded or whatever it was that happened to him. Yeah. And they brought somebody else in to play drums.
Yeah. So, like I said, if you're going to do a rock band is going to get together or reunite or stay together, you got to have at least the lead singer and the guitar player. You got to have Daltrey and Townsend. You got to have Jagger and Richards. You got to have Page and Plant. And in this case, that's why they're together tonight. You finally got Axl and Slash back together. So now I was not a huge, I mean, I'm not a, I was never a huge Guns N' Roses fan. Are you a huge Guns N' Roses fan?
Not really. I like some of their songs. I think their ballad Patience was actually my favorite song of theirs, but I appreciated what they did because they were a younger band playing the hard rock, which, you know, a lot of people still wanted to hear, and they weren't as, say, old as, like, Aerosmith or
right.
Led Zeppelin.
Well, that's the void that they did fill, because
right.
At that time in the late 80s there, a lot of the classic rock bands, now the funny thing is they're all in their 60s and they're still playing, but at that time they were considered old because they were in their 40s.
Exactly. Well, the other thing too, and I wanted to bring this up about the Guns N' Roses show, and I had some friends who actually went to the Friday night show and they said how good it was. And I was glad to hear that because, as you mentioned earlier in the show, you know, Guns N' Roses was not exactly known for doing great concerts.
No.
They've had, you know, not just getting on stage late.
Always sloppy. Yeah.
Riots, security problems, bad sound. This was not a band that was like, you know, when you see certain acts, you go, oh, you're always going to see a great show. This is kind of their redemption right now.
Yeah, no. And, well, you know, I think once again, you get a little older, you get a little more responsibility, and you realize your legacy. And even Axl Rose, as screwed up as he is, maybe has a little moment of clarity.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Hold on after this news break, because I want to talk about my band and some other bands that we might want to talk about getting reunited, and maybe some other pop culture tidbits we can get into before the show ends. So we'll be back
with
Nick Kaler after the news. But right now, we're going to go to Roger Badish and that news. That's just on 720 WGN Chicago at WGN. Radio.com. Hey, Roger.
Hey, how you doing?
Not bad. So you were a film teacher, huh?
Yeah.
Nice.
Won 2 National Emmy Awards and 4 Chicago Emmy Awards.
Get out of here.
Yep. And we also had our film shown in England.
Get out of town.
No.
You got one of those Emmy Awards?
Yep.
With the round ball?
No. We got a different one. It was a special one from the executive committee, special for high school students.
It's very heavy.
That's and it good. Does have the Emmy emblem on it.
Hey.
And, yeah.
Awards count. That's all I have to say. Awards count.
They're okay.
I don't know what we're talking about. Do your news. Elton Jim Toronto here at WGN, 720 AM, filling in for Brian Noonan. I'll be here till 9 o'clock. Rick Kogan will be in at 9 o'clock for his Sunday night show. It'll be nice to talk to Rick. Haven't talked to him in a while. Gotta love Rick Kogan's voice. Nick Kaler, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, so the reason I was playing a little music there by Walk of Life by Dire Straits is because... If you ask me right now which band I would most like to see reunite, we were talking about this before the news, with Guns N' Roses being in town and them obviously getting together after so many years with Axl Rose and Slash, what bands would you like to see together? Now, Mick Kaler, who's my charter member of the Pop Culture Club here on the Jim Toronto Show, you mentioned you'd like the original lineup of REM with their drummer, Bill Berry.
Yep, that's what I want.
And I definitely agree with you there. I've got a few others, though. But number one for me would be Dire Straits. Dire Straits, from the late 70s and throughout the 80s and even a little in the 90s, just put out an incredible catalog of albums. And Mark Knopfler has continued to make these, you know, his solo albums. He continues to tour. He'll play a few Dire Straits songs, but there are some great albums like Making Movies and Love Over Gold and Brothers in Arms, obviously.
That was the big one.
Yeah, and even an album that not too many people know about, their second album is called Communique, mm-hmm. which is a great rocking album with that great distinctive Mark Knopfler guitar. And I just, there's that band, sadly, the full breadth of their catalog is unknown to a whole generation now because no one's playing it and no one's discovering it. And I don't know why he can't put that band together.
Yeah, it's, you know, what the one problem is, and we've talked in the past about this, about Mark Knopfler's solo work, it doesn't really sell well, but there's the Mark Knopfler brand to it. I mean, you cannot mistake a Mark Knopfler guitar. You could have like
exactly.
a thousand guitarists.
Oh,
and his guitar playing is so distinctive that I wonder if he just thinks, well, whatever I play, people know I'm Dire Straits.
No. I want to hear, I mean, this album I talk about, Making Movies, which didn't have the big hit like Brothers in Arms did in 1985 with, you know, Money for Nothing and Brothers in Arms and Walk of Life. But this other album had Romeo and Juliet, Tunnel of Love.
And Skate Away.
Skate Away, Espresso Love. I mean, my gosh. It was produced, and Roy Bittan from the E Street Band is on it. I believe Jimmy Iovine produced it. I mean, it's just a great, great album, and all that music is just kind of fading away. Before we continue, Mick, very quick, I just want to give away some tickets here to my play as well as another play that's showing this month at the Rouse Center for the Performing Arts in Crystal Lake. I'm going to play starting this Sunday, or starting this coming Friday, July 8th, called Art. I'm giving away two tickets to that to the 7th caller. And then to the 14th caller and the 21st caller, we'll be giving tickets away to another show that's also running simultaneously with us called Title of Show. It's a musical. So those are free tickets. You can use them for any dates throughout the run. If you would, though, I'd love for you to come out and see me in Art. It's a Tony Award-winning show. We're at the Rouse Center for the Arts in downtown Crystal Lake, running from July 8th to 31st. But right now, the 7th caller gets tickets to see Art with me in that, and then the 14th caller and the 21st caller will get tickets to another show that's also running called Title of Show. You will get the phone number. You can call the box office, and you can pick whichever show you want, which is most convenient for you. So get on the call, and I'd love to see you there if you do show up. I appreciate it. So anyway, to me, Dire Straits is, like I said, is a band that that definitely, and not only, I mean, the money that they could get because they were an international band. They were popular, yeah, all around the world, not just in the United States and England. And I just can't believe that, I mean, we talked about this many times just off the air. You know, in today's world, especially with these mega bands that can demand hundreds of millions of dollars that are toured, even if you hate every member of the band, you never have to see them.
Exactly. Separate dressing rooms, separate jets, separate hotels,
yeah.
The whole deal.
And a big band like Dire Straits,
yeah,
you don't even have to. You pump in enough fog,
couple of lights that blind your
yeah.
eyes. You know, you wear sunglasses.
Yeah, two good fog machines. You never have to even see the guy at the other end of the stage.
You just have to hear him, and that's it.
And there's so much great music that's not being appreciated and heard. And Dire Straits to me is one of those bands that that I really would love to see, and I would love for more people to be aware of, as opposed to just the big hits. You know what I mean?
Right.
Now, the other one that I think would be cool to get together is Talking Heads.
Yeah, that's an excellent choice because I never saw them live. I know you did.
Yeah, I saw them in 83.
I saw, I saw the Stop Making Sense movie, and I was just like, you know, I always loved the Talking Heads music, and to see them put that show on the way they did was so cool. I was like, yeah, especially the very, very end when they do Take Me to the River and the whole place. It's like a revival, you know. It's
well, just, yeah, insane. I mean, and the funny thing is, once again, you have to remember that this was in 1983, and there is that's still considered one of the best rock movies of all time called
best
Stop
Making
Sense.
Concert movies, right.
Yeah, concert movies. Stop Making Sense with the Talking Heads from their 1983 tour, which was directed by Jonathan Demme, who did Silence of the Lambs. And what was so great about it at the time, that there was still a naivete. At that time, there was no internet. You really didn't know, like, what the set lists were for concerts. You didn't know what the whole thing was of the whole show.
Right. You didn't know what to expect.
Yeah. So when I got there, I had no idea. And so David Byrne walks out with just a boombox and a guitar and starts playing Psycho Killer. And then as the show continues for the next hour or so, more pieces of the band come on for each song until about an hour in, and the stage goes from being relatively bare with just a guy in a boombox to bursting at the seams with instruments. It was amazing.
Yeah.
And then he had the big white suit, and it was just so cool. And so I'd love to see them. But once again, from everything I read, David Byrne and the other members, Jerry Harrison, Tina, was it Chris France and Tina Weymouth? They're not going to get together. He loves doing flamenco music.
Well, it's that, and the other thing is David Byrne. Just when you're talking about the way that they started that show the way he did that, you know that was his concept, and he's very artistic and very into his artistry. And he's probably one of those guys who thinks, if I go back with the band, this is not artistic. This is just us hanging out playing our old songs, which as much as you and I would love it, I don't think they would.
Yeah, I know, but you know what? You know, Sting said that, okay, for years. You know, they broke up the Police. So finally, what was it, about 4 or 5 years ago, the Police got back together. From every account I heard, Sting, by the third show, hated it.
Yeah.
He couldn't stand the tour and the whole thing. And you know what? I read after Sting, when the tour was over, Sting bought an apartment in New York for $25 million.
Thank you, tour.
Yeah, thank you, tour. I never have to see Stuart Copeland or what was his name?
Andy Summers.
Andy Summers again. But you know what? I was able to get a $25 million apartment. So you know what? Just play the songs and let us enjoy it. And for that hour and a half or 2 hours or 3 hours out of your life, just grin and bear it. Because, you know, you hit the lottery.
I was just thinking when you were describing that, Sting could have a T-shirt that says, I toured with the Police and all I got was this lousy $25 million apartment.
Exactly. And, you know, as I said before, the thing is about these older bands that we're talking about here, the window is closing not only for them in terms of their abilities and still having their talents as they age, but the demand in terms of their audience.
Right. The fans and the interest is going to start.
Yeah, the baby boomers and stuff, you know. They're the ones who are willing to pay. I mean, look at what they're doing for that old cella, what they're calling out there in California in October with The Who and The Stones and Dylan and McCartney and Roger Waters from Pink Floyd and Neil Young. I mean, the tickets they sold out in 2 seconds, and the tickets were very high priced. There is a demand, but that demand is shrinking because the baby boomers are getting older. and that's another one of my bands. Here's two that I would like to see, but once again, as you did with R.E.M., would have to be a specific lineup. I would like to see Genesis get back together, but you got to have Peter Gabriel. I don't want to just see Phil Collins and Rutherford and Tony Banks. I want to see Peter Gabriel. So that I think would be cool, and that would be great to see them do like The Lamb Lays Down on Broadway or something. You know, that whole album.
Right.
And then another one I would really like to see, which. I mean, it's they weren't the greatest band on earth, but I really there's some albums of Supertramps that I think are, I mean, Breakfast in America. To see the original Supertramp lineup once again, I need both vocalists,
mm-hmm, Roger Hodgson.
Yeah, to do that and do the whole album, that would be amazing. But you know, as we get a little older here, there's a lot of the bands. I mean, Zeppelin we know is not going to get back together. Robert Plant, God love him, is saying I can't. You know, he's not saying this, but he's by turning down all these offers. For reunions, he's basically saying, look, I can't hit those notes anymore.
Well, and he showed that years ago at Live Aid, too.
Yeah. So, yeah, and they did a show a few years ago in London to, you know, make up for that horrible appearance.
Experience.
And they did a great job. They did two or three shows at the O2 Arena in London, and his voice got to rest in between. The fans loved it. The critics thought it was great, and they left the legacy there. And as much as they keep throwing money at Robert Plant, I got to give him credit. He is more in tuned with the legacy. Now, I hear that Jimmy Page is out of his mind. And just in case, Mick, if we get invited to the Led Zeppelin Christmas party,
yeah,
three things not to bring up: politics, religion, and reunions.
No problem. I can do that.
Don't mention those three things to Jimmy Page at the Christmas party this year for Led Zeppelin, because if you bring up reunions, he's going to get a little pissed.
And also, I'm not going to pull Jimmy's guitar out of his hands and start playing Stairway to Heaven, because that's a rule. No Stairway to Heaven. Hey, I got another band that I want to see.
Oh, yeah, what's that?
Three words. Are you ready?
Yeah, go ahead.
Dexys Midnight Runners.
I got news for you. They're together.
Really?
I get this magazine from Britain called Uncut. They had a 7-page spread on them.
For their one hit, right?
I know. Oh, in England, they're like gods. I can't believe you said that, because I was reading this magazine a couple months ago, Uncut Magazine, and I'm like, Dexys Midnight Runners? You're giving seven pages to them?
I remember the old Simpsons episode when Homer was with the B-sharps, and they won a Grammy, and Bart says, I can't believe you beat out Dexys Midnight Runners. And Homer says, is that the last time you'll hear from them? That's for sure.
Oh, well, Mick, it's always...
And actually, one more, and this isn't so much a reunion.
What's that?
But I know people bring this up from time to time. Whatever happened to the lead singer of the Fine Young Cannibals?
Oh, that's a good question.
Roland Gift, you know, the guy with the funky hairline. Whatever happened to that guy?
And wasn't he a part of, like, public... What was that band that had Save It For Later?
That was, that was English Beat.
Wasn't he an English Beat?
No, I don't think so.
No, I thought he was. I don't know. Who knows? He's another one. Where are they now?
Keep in mind, English Beat was out before Fine Young Cannibals, too, because Fine Young Cannibals, their big album was like an 88 or 89.
That's what I mean. I thought that guy was in the English Beat, and then when they broke up, I thought he was a part of that band. Maybe not.
I haven't heard from him since.
Well, he's with Danny Bonaducci right now.
Him and Dexy from Dexy's Midnight Runners.
Well, Mick Kaler, thanks so much for joining me for another fun and interesting and insightful segment of Pop Culture Club. Do you get it? Pop Culture Club.
I'm with you. Nope, my pleasure, pal.
All right, thanks a lot, Mick.
Later.
Elton Jim Toronto here at WGN, 720 a.m. in the city of Chi. It's 8:49. We'll be back after this. Elton Jim Toronto here at WGN AM 720. Welcome to the Paradise City tonight, where the grass is green, girls are pretty. I don't know if if Guns N' Roses is out on stage yet, but I'm sure in the next half hour or so, you're going to see some fireworks out there musically, as well as, I'm sure, if they do it like Paul McCartney, they will have pyrotechnics during Live and Let Die. I guess that's part of the gig. If you do that song, you have to do it. But anyway, Roger, you were talking about, so real quick, we've got some tickets to give away. One more pair of tickets to see this show in Carroll Stream called Title of Show. It's by the William Street Repertory at the Rouse Center for the Performing Arts. It's called Title of Show. It's a musical. It's from the same production company that's putting on the show that I'm in, which is called Art, which will be starting this Friday, July 8th, and run through the 31st. It's WSREP.org. If you want some information, I'd love for you to come out and see me in this play called Art. But also, there's another show called Title of Show. We're giving away two free tickets to that, also running from July 15th through August 6th. Seventh caller at 312-981-7200 gets those tickets. Real quick, I do have a podcast here at WGN on their WGNplus.com every week. It's called Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic. And if you're an Elton John fan, you'll get the reference. And so every Monday, there's a new podcast up there for an hour. So if you like today's show, you'll hear a little more of that and a little more extra stuff, too, every Monday at WGNplus.com. Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. And this Friday, I will be back on these airwaves from 10 o'clock till noon, sitting in with Bill Leff. I believe Wendy Snyder is going to be on vacation next week, this coming week. And so I will be on this coming Friday with Bill Leff on the 8th. That's going to be a busy day for me. I'm going to be on the radio from 10 to noon. I'm going to be on the stage at 8 o'clock at night in Carroll Stream. But what can I say? I'm a slave to the arts.
Well, you're a moving target, dude.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Got to keep moving.
Yeah. The target doesn't bring in any money, though. Yeah. At least that's what my accountant says. You're the busiest guy who makes no money I've ever seen.
Got to keep moving. Got to keep moving.
So you were talking about something to see tomorrow, you said,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Listen, you know, July 4th, Independence Day tomorrow.
Is that tomorrow?
Well, let me check the calendar again. flip. Yeah, okay. Tons of stuff to do tomorrow. Everyone's already got their plans and everything, but yeah. I cordially invite everybody to come to the best little 4th of July parade in the Chicago area.
Oh.
This will be in Skokie.
Oh.
This will be my second year serving as the parade master of ceremonies.
Nice.
The last part of the parade on Oakton from about Skokie Boulevard down to Oakton Park has speakers up, and I announce the floats coming through. We do interviews with people. We go around to the crowd. We do some great things. And we have got a star-studded celebrity gathering.
Nice.
Today. Not only will we have Ed Curran from Channel 2 and
I know Ed. Ed's
his
a nice guy.
Weather truck, his yeah. Channel 2 weather van will be there.
Nice.
We have, and I hope I get everything right, Karen Jordan from Channel 7 and her husband from, I believe he's from Channel 5.
Yeah, Channel 5, right.
Right. And we also have Catherine Johns, who will be one of our celebrities.
And thanks for inviting me, Roger.
Well, I mean, I'm saving the best for next year,
okay.
Obviously.
Yeah.
But here's a last-minute addition that we had because she's already got the WGN fan band. You know, Orion's done with it after tonight.
Well, I was at the Guns N' Roses. In fact, I'm there. I've got my Slash top hat on, and Gloria and I will be enjoying Live and Let Die.
Well, after you're done with the truck, Orion.
Yes, I will bring the WGN van, and by the way, corn down 3% at the close.
Thanks for that newsflash. Patty is going to need the truck. Patty Vasquez.
Oh.
Will have the fan van, and she will be in the Skokie Parade tomorrow. Everything starts off at noon, goes down Lincoln Avenue to Oakton, then Oakton down towards Oakton Park, goes east on Oakton. It's going to be a great time. We've got some great bands, great floats. It's also honoring our military. We have some military celebrities who will be there, and it's going to be fun. So I invite everybody to come out, and I think we're going to be the first selfie Independence Day parade in America.
How do you like that?
If you take a selfie with the parade in the background or with anyone in the parade, and then you submit it to the Skokie 4th of July parade site, you could win something.
Now, this isn't like the Pride parade, right? I mean, you're not going to be wearing a thong, right?
Again? No, no. I will be dressed.
You're not going to be wearing a red, white, and blue thong?
No.
Hey, did you give your information out that you needed to get or no? Is there one?
Yes, that's okay. Ten from noon. What did I just say?
Yeah. You don't even know.
From noon to 2.
Have another drink, Roger. Wow.
I've got my water over here.
Well, you know what? I was watching the CBS Sunday morning show. That's on at like 8 a.m. with Charles Odgood.
Oh, yeah.
And they had a great little tidbit. John Adams
mm-hmm.
did not want July 4th to be the day of America's birthday. He wanted July 2nd because July 2nd
mm-hmm.
is when the Congress actually voted on it.
Right. I remember
July 4th,
about that.
I think, is when they mm-hmm. signed it or something. Mm-hmm. But Congress actually approved it on July 2nd. And
right.
He would never celebrate July 4th.
Right. Well, John Adams.
And then
was
he
a
died
crazy
on 4th of
guy.
But he died on 4th of July.
Exactly.
On the same day that Thomas Jefferson did, and he hated Thomas Jefferson. So this guy had to go to the grave, not a happy guy.
No. No.
Yeah, but he had a nice miniseries.
Well,
about
you know, him. We almost had the turkey instead of the eagle. Is
right.
The national bird.
That's true.
Yeah. So.
Well, anyway, have a great 4th of July when you're out there.
Look forward to seeing people
parading. And as I said before, listen to me this week with Bill Leff from 10 to noon on Friday. And if you can make it out to Crystal Lake to see the production of art at the Rouse Center for the Performing Arts in Crystal Lake from July 8th through the 31st, I'd love to see you. Always fun to be here on WGN. Always fun to work with you, Roger, as well.
Thank you, sir. Same back.
It is 4th of July. Have a safe and explosive day.
In a safe way.
In a safe way. Yeah. And hopefully, as Bill Harris used to say on his movie review show, we'll talk again.
I like that.
You like that?
Yeah.
This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. There's no sponsor, but there is Roger Badgett. Roger Badgett at 9 o'clock.